Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history.
There is no reasonable level of anti-Semitism.
Nordic resistance movement are present.
Greetings, comrades, and welcome back to the Nordic Frontier. It is the final solution to your podcast problem, and you have arrived. It is Nordic Tuesday once again, and we're coming to you live on Odyssey.com on the Nordic Frontier channel. It is a national socialist broadcast, and it is hosted by members of the Nordic Resistance Movement. And my name is Andreas. With me, I have Mike. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. How about you?
Pretty nice. It is hot. And how are you doing in Iceland, Gusfinnur, back on the show?
Doing good. I would love to have some sun instead of rain, but it is what it is.
Or at least it's not snow, so...
Yeah, you know, I like snow more than rain, so... But...
Yeah.
But yeah, you can't complain about fresh water falling from the sky, so you should be thankful for that.
Exactly. Like, we have had quite a drought up here, so I'm very thankful for the rain that we've had for the past few days. It's been a bit on and off. But, the well was getting dry and the ground was cracking, so it was time for a bit of a soak. And we were
out... Good to have a full well.
Yeah. Me and the kids were out running in our underwear, having a shower. It's pretty nice.
Nice.
Good times. So, yes, we are back this week. We said that it might not have been a show, but there is a show, and we're here. It is episode 264, and we have a special guest back on the show. We have Jan Lamprecht from South Africa. How are you doing?
Hi there, Andreas. It's an honor to be back on your show. It's always awesome to be here.
It's nice to have you. We have a lot to discuss, so we're going to get into it in a little bit. Just going to do some office work. We have currently a little bit of a campaign, donation campaign, to upgrade the equipment of the Nordic Frontier. And the people during the week have been contributing. Very nice to see. We have Dedalion Palmerson. I hope I didn't slaughter him.
Getting swatted.
Yeah, someone's having sirens. I'm guessing South Africa? No, is this Iceland?
No, it's mine. There's police cars and fire squad and ambulances driving past my house. So,
but it's raining. How can you have fires? What are they doing?
Maybe it's the Venezuelans. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Bringing the heat with them. Nice.
Yep.
Well, my guess would have been South Africa. Maybe they don't even have sirens anymore. They just have crime.
There is a big hospital close to my house and a fire department, so this is regular.
Okay, so excuse me for one second. I've missed one little comment here that I wanted to get in on the donations. But... just unbearably scrolling right now. I might have to add it on later. No, here we go. Here we go. Just 2 seconds. Yes, we have another donation from Lionel. There you go. Thank you very much. And we say...
May the blessing of cheer be upon you.
So if you want to contribute to the show and to the Nordic Resistance Movement, you can do so on Odyssey.com. If you have a user, you can register your debit or credit card and make donations to the different videos we have, a few different channels. But if you're listening live right now, you can donate to the podcast with questions and comments, and we will read them during the show. We have Jan on today, so you can ask questions about his work, about South Africa, or anything that we are discussing. Very nice indeed. Yeah, I had a little adventure earlier today. It was quite a nice day. It was a little bit overcast, but we had a nice canoe lake, and people know what that means. You have to go in a canoe when it's just nice and calm, like a mirror on there. So I got the kids out in the canoe. We're going to go to the island, do some fishing. We got some worms to do some... What is meta in English? It's the fishing
pole
with bait. Fishing.
Bait.
Bait fishing, pole fishing. Pole fishing. The ones you do with a float, I guess. What's the float called? Jesus, I should have done some Googling before I said this.
It's called float pole fishing.
Yeah, so that's what we're planning to do. But we went to the island with the canoe, and it was good times.
A thunderstorm here.
Great. And exactly. So we went to the island. As soon as we got everything set up, ready, put the first worm on, swung it into the lake, I heard thunder in the distance. And I'm like, well, this might be interesting. We did a few worms. We fed the fish, as we call it. They just eat the worms. And after a few minutes, I started seeing flashes right in front of me in the sky. I was like, oh my God, this might get hairy. The lake was still calm. I was like, all right, if we just pack up now we might be able to leave. So I started slightly packing up. We just arrived. We were there for like 15, 20 minutes, maybe max. And then the kids run off having some sort of game on the other side of the island. And I go, God damn it. So then I start rushing because now the wind is picking up and it's quite windy. And people that have been in a canoe, I don't know, there's different models of canoes, but when you're four people, even though they're tiny, you're four people in a canoe and you got some waves, it starts getting pretty exciting. So, we got back in the pissing rain. Everyone was soaked. It was a good time. And I said, you know, you'll remember this day more than you'll remember your YouTube videos from yesterday.
Definitely.
These kinds of, I wouldn't say catastrophic moments because it was a really good time. I really enjoyed it. So we're putting that in the calendar. It's good stuff. I encourage people to go out fishing with their kids. It's always a good time. It doesn't matter if there's thunder in the sky.
People are so afraid of thunder. I'm having a thunderstorm here now. It seems so.
What's the odds of you dying, standing out there holding a metal rod? So small. Go out and live life.
Why would you fish with a metal rod?
No, I mean just holding a metal rod to tempt fate. All right, so with that little story, we'll get into the content and we'll be right back.
Hello, this is Mark Collett from Patriotic Alternative. And you are listening to the Nordic Frontier. The solution to your podcast problem. The solution to your podcast problem.
Indeed, it is the Nordic Frontier final solution to your podcast problem. And we're going to talk about South Africa with John Lamprecht tonight. But first I was going to say, how's the weather down there? Is it winter time in South Africa?
Yes, it's winter. And, due to lack of electricity, it's a real problem to even have a heater on. Electricity is so expensive that this winter I'm going to be trying to go through the winter without using a heater at all.
Wow.
And,
How cold does it get in the wintertime?
It's nothing like what you people have, but on the coldest days, it can get down to close to zero. You can get like a cold day where it's down to 3 or something like that at the coldest time. Mm. So it's nothing like Europe and it's nothing like snow.
Do you ever get snow? Have you seen snow down there?
You know what? It's interesting how the climate has changed. My mother grew up and spent some time in Johannesburg, and that was in the 1920s. That's like about a century ago. And my mother told me that they played with snow, that they had snowball fights and everything in Johannesburg 100 years ago. When I came to South Africa in 1981, it was the coldest year that I've ever had in South Africa. Was the very first year I came, and they started having snow. I was in Pretoria, which is about 50 kilometers to the north, and it's warmer. There was a little bit of snow in Johannesburg, no snow in Pretoria. And that was the closest that I've come to actually seeing snow. We do get snow on the mountains. We've got the Drakensberg Mountains. They are covered in snow every year. And there are parts of South Africa further to the south that do get snow every now and then. So it does get a lot colder further south. If you go like 150 kilometers south, from the Free State onwards, it gets pretty cold. And the climate is kind of strange because there are different air currents. And when you get down to Cape Town, in the region of the Cape, the weather there is different. So up here in the north, it is very dry. It's totally dry in the winter, but in Cape Town, it rains. It rains in Cape Town during the winter, and it's not that cold. But there are parts of South Africa that do get snow. But Johannesburg used to. My mother used to tell me how much they used to play in the snow, have snowball fights and everything. Now there's never snow. You never see snow. The closest I came to seeing snow was about 15 years ago. There was one cold, cold day in Johannesburg, and I was outside, and I could see like little flakes coming down, but they'd melt before they hit the ground. That was the closest I've seen to snow. So there is some climate change, yeah.
There's some global warming down there. It's nice. Yeah, I was surprised. Like when I lived in Australia, there was a few areas where it got pretty cold. Like the south of Australia. It's upside down. So south of Australia gets pretty cold in the winter. And we used to get frost right about this time in June. And that was interesting. Whereas in the middle of the day, you would have plus 25. So we start off with frost and then have like a beach day, 25 degrees. Pretty crazy.
If you want to see real changes in hot and cold, the Free State is the place for that. Bloemfontein and Welkom can get very hot and very cold. They can go into the minus degrees Celsius. You know, like minus six and all that. Mm. And then on other days, they can be freaking hot.
Mm. Yeah, I don't know really what to expect when you live like that. It's pretty hard to dress. Because the problem we had, we were working on a farm, and we were picking apples specifically. And you can't do that with gloves. It's very hard to do that with gloves. And then you're starting out with like -1, 0 degrees in the morning. And you have very cold hands, and you're like fully clothed. And in the afternoon, you're there in shorts and wearing nothing. So I don't like that. I like a stable weather. I like the climates that we have up here, very acclimatized to that. But I guess in your region, you have very stable, like overall, all through the year.
Yes, our temperatures don't change much. You know, in the winter, in the middle of the day, on a cold winter's day, it's like 10 degrees, let's say. Sometimes a little bit higher, a little bit lower. And then come summertime, then the temperature is above 20. It's actually between 20 and 26 for most of the summer. We have a very nice climate. And in winter, it's very sunny. We don't have clouds. It's chilly, but it's very, very bright. So it's great for solar panels. So solar panels in winter, oh, thank God, there's no freaking cloud. In summer, we have a bit of rain. We don't have much rain in South Africa. So so the only thing that irritates me in the summer is the rain, because I need the solar panels.
Yeah, we're going to discuss that. That is a viable option in your part of the world. There was this video floating around a few months ago, which made me want to invite you on to get your thoughts on what's going on in South Africa. Because I hear things all the time, and you see these videos, and you get links of, for example, the farm murders. And every time you see a new horrendous farm murder, a slaughter, you think, oh my God, it's getting so bad down there. But this is like a daily or weekly, monthly occurrence. And when I brought it up with you, you said that there hadn't really been any uptick in farm murders. It's just the usual ones that are occasionally done. But it's very hard from, like, unless you're really on it up here to stay on the news, to tell if it's getting worse or not. But some indication that it is getting worse is the electricity, like you mentioned earlier, and just infrastructure completely collapsing in metropolitan areas. But there was this one video that made me wanted to discuss it, because this is interesting. This is black people wanting to come back, basically. Let's have a look.
Let the power go back to the white people. We as black people, we just have to accept that we failed dismally. For 28 years, we were given chance to prove ourselves and we failed dismally. This thing of voting one black person after the other, it won't help us with anything. Let power go back to white people. When white people were governing this country, irrespective of whatever that they were doing, but our parents were working. Kids used to get bursaries to go to universities. Town used to be clean. There was job everywhere. You apply, you get a job. Even if you didn't have qualifications, you could work in hotels, you could work wherever. You could work even in the farms. There were farms where people could work. Black people are a dismal failure. They can't govern. Let the power go back to white people. Let us just swallow our pride and give these white people power back so that the country can go back to normal. We have to accept that. We will go to the graves of those people who fought who fought apartheid. We will go and inform them that, guys, we tried, we failed. We will visit the graves of Tata Mandela. We will visit the graves of all the stalwarts who fought for this democracy. Because at this point in time, there is no democracy in our country. There is nothing left. We really, really respect people who fought for the liberation. We respect them and we will still gonna respect them. But at the end of the day, we just have to take this power back to the white people. We are tired. South Africa is a mess. Everywhere you go, it's a mess. We are tired. We accept we failed. Black people cannot rule. Black people cannot govern. White people should take over this country so that this country can have dignity back. All these things that are happening in our country, they will never happen again. This problem of foreigners, this problem of crime, it won't be there anymore. White people, they don't play. They don't play. They rule, they govern. The police, white police, they don't play with criminals. They don't play with undocumented people in the country. Like what we're seeing in this country again. White people...
Yeah, she's starting to sound like Pastor Manning.
You niggas are crazy!
You know? So, it's an interesting realization that because there's so many white people, they don't understand this stuff. And then you have non-white people that understand that, you know, we just need to give this stuff up. But still, they don't have the realization of why things are the way they are. She still wants to honor the blacks, the Mandelas, and everyone who fought for the liberation. Why? It was wrong. From the beginning, everything was wrong. And now you're in the shitter. So yeah, do you have any initial comments on a video like this about black people realizing that white people should come back?
That's an excellent video. I've seen the shorter version of it. I didn't actually know it was that long. I'll ask you for the link afterwards, because the short piece that I heard was just like 30 seconds long, and it was doing the rounds among the whites here. I've got many comments on this. The first thing is that she's basically pointing out that they fought for something, but it was an empty victory. They fought the whites, and what did they get? And how much better off are they? But you know, Andreas, we used to tell the blacks, we used to tell them up front that what you are going to get is not what you're expecting. You know, Andreas, when I was young, I was about 16 years old. In the final years in Rhodesia. And it was just before we left our farm and we moved to the city, and then my father died, and then I came to South Africa. So it wasn't like the last 2 years of Rhodesia. And we had lots of blacks working for us on the farm. We had about five or six blacks on our little farm. And the one black guy that I used to talk to a lot was, you know, and this is still... colonialism. So you know, we had a good time. We had blacks who cleaned our houses, and we had a black guy who cooked our food. So his name was Elliot, And so Elliot was a black that I could speak to quite a bit, and he'd tell me things. And as a 16-year-old, I tried to talk to Elliot. I said to Elliot, you know, Elliot, in the future, there could come a time where you people might not have food. And that's what I was telling him as a 16-year-old. Obviously, he didn't believe any of this stuff. But there were things that whites told blacks. And even in South Africa, before black rule, there were lots and lots of debates. Whites used to debate among themselves. It used to be on TV. Lots and lots of debates where we talk about, you know, if these people come to power and they do those things that they claim they want to do, how's it going to work out for them, and how's it going to work out for us? And all these things that have gone wrong, it's not like whites did not know. Whites knew 100% up front, and that's why whites fought them and resisted them with military force. Because we said that if these people come to power, they're going to destroy the country. They're going to destroy everything. They'll even destroy the stuff that they claim that they're going to get. And, you know, I'm also going to work a bit of Zimbabwe stuff into this because it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for example, about in the early 2000s, when Robert Mugabe went after the white farmers and he destroyed the 5,000 white farmers in Zimbabwe. Robert Mugabe, the communist, he was basically like the Mandela of, you could almost call him the Mandela of Rhodesia, right?
Yeah.
And Mugabe got up on TV as the president and he said, well, you know, they say black people can't farm. That's obviously nonsense. Black people can farm, you know. You know, it's just a bunch of crap that whites are talking. Well, you know what? 20 years later, it really does appear that black people really cannot farm. In fact, you can see that black people can't farm because I'll tell you something. In this Ukraine war, there are a number of black countries now in Africa.
They rely on the wheat?
They rely on the wheat. It makes me laugh to think that, you know, look at Russia and Ukraine. Those places get really cold. They got really short summers. Yet they are producing mountains of wheat that can feed Africa. Here in Africa, you know, under white colonial rule, in the days before these blacks started their crap, okay, which was Jewish and Soviet inspired, as before they started that, in the past, when I was born, Africa used to be a net exporter of food. Africa exported food under white colonial rule. And there were only about like 6 or 7 million whites spread across Africa. And Africa produced more than it needed. You can go and look at every colony, whether it was German East Africa or Portuguese Angola or any place in Africa, British Kenya, you name it. They were producing more than they needed. We were feeding all the blacks in Africa from farms in Africa, and we had so much food we exported to the world. Mm. And now that has completely changed. All these blacks are now totally dependent. They're totally dependent on imports. South Africa even imports some kinds of food. It's crazy. We never used to be like that. But it goes back to the thing of, you know, IQ, work ethic, all those kinds of things. Farming is a very difficult thing to do. But white men love farming. It's a fact. You can see it everywhere on the planet. You'll see when white men get a chance and they have a farm, they rock with it. And they can farm and grow stuff anywhere, whether it's hot, whether it's cold, whether it's dry, you name it. In Rhodesia, we used to have two growing seasons. In some places, we'd have cotton in the winter and maize in the summer. But you know, it's all about IQ. They do not want to accept that what we told them about themselves is true, that they are retarded, that they aren't capable of doing these things. And they want to argue with us, but we're the ones that make the thing work. We give them work, and we give them work that they can handle. And it's not like we don't know what they can do. We know them inside out.
Yeah.
So, anyway, let me just touch on a few other points from there. One of the things that does happen in Africa that you people aren't aware of is, like this black woman, there are quite a lot of blacks all over Africa who begin to realize their own shortcomings of their own governments, of their own leaders. They begin to realize their own shortcomings of their own society. And these people lose faith and morale in their own system. But it happens very quietly, and you don't hear about it. And for one of them to start talking like that, she can talk like that, but that notion that blacks will ever give power back to whites, that will never happen. Never happen. All that's going to happen is that the blacks who are in charge, they will fight and lie and steal and kill to remain in power. And those blacks have said it. There was a story I've told in the past, which I'll repeat for people who haven't heard it. Ian Smith of Rhodesia. In the 1980s, he had been the Prime Minister of Rhodesia. In the 1980s, he told an interesting story. At one point, he went and spoke to a black guy. He went and spoke to a black minister, government minister, about something. And while he was talking to this black government minister, he asked him an interesting question. He said to him, "How was it that you guys came to believe in communism?" So the black guy said to him, "Well, the Russians took us to Cuba, and they showed us communism there."
Jewish wizards.
And they showed us communism there, and we weren't impressed. Then the Russians took us to Russia, and they showed us communism there, and we weren't impressed. And then one day the Russians said to us, "With this system, you can remain in power forever." And that's when we converted to communism. And if you look at the blacks of South Africa, all these blacks, whether it's Rhodesia, whether it's Angola, whether it's Mozambique, whether it's South Africa, whether it's Namibia, they still believe in that stuff. And there's something that I wanted to say that slipped my mind now. Just bear with me. The blacks in South Africa have said on a number of occasions that there are mistakes that the whites made that they will never make. And different blacks have said this. Winnie Mandela said this. Others have said it. And there are other indications that they also think in terms of power forever. They've said things like, and they're not Christians, they've said things like the ANC, which is the ruling party, the ANC will rule until Jesus comes back. So trust me, they're not Christians, okay? And they've said in many ways that the whites gave up power. They will never give up power. So let me tell you that if there are ever any blacks who seriously talk about this kind of thing and they gain any kind of traction, the ruling party will kill them. They will be either beaten up or killed. This stuff will never happen. The only way that anything's going to change is through warfare and revolution and war. That's all that can change it. But yes, there are blacks who see these things, and there are blacks who observe it. And I have got one black from Zimbabwe that I talk to every now and then when I want to find out how things are going among the blacks. And he tells me the most horrific things. I also ran into another guy who's in our area, and I asked him as well some questions. And you should hear the things that come out of their mouths. They talk about how blacks are murdering their own. They're even murdering and killing and raping six-year-olds. They're up to all kinds of nonsense. These people are crazy, and they shouldn't have been allowed. giving black people the invention of black politics is the worst idea that was ever conceived. It's definitely a dreadful idea, and we whites and blacks cannot coexist. We need to part company.
Yeah, sure.
I have like a question.
The person making the sounds, the noise, can they mute if they're gonna rustle about?
It's our Icelandic. Maybe he got swatted.
Yeah. Sorry, I was moving my chair.
Yeah, no worries.
For fuck's sake, did you move your whole apartment to move a chair?
The mic was on a stand on the table. And when I moved my feet, the mic moved around, and I had to adjust the chair for a nice, comfy position.
Yes, no, I had a follow-up question there, because this thing I've been bumping into a lot of South Africans lately. for reasons, but they one flee. Thing I don't, one thing I do not really understand, because like we talked about these blacks realizing that the blacks can't run the country, but I'm baffled about how many white South Africans seem to have such a bad time or connecting the dots, like truly completely oblivious to why things went to hell in a handbasket. It's like they'll talk about the issues, they'll talk about things being bad, but they never mention race. It's completely erased as an
like
option.
What changed? It's like one thing, major thing that changed, and now it's
What was the change? And then we have the. We talked about earlier this week that the guy on YouTube, he's married to a Chinese woman, he's a race mixer and stuff like that. But he keeps whining about how China is shit and how South Africa is shit, but he still can't connect the dots. Like, how is that possible? You're living in the show. You should be aware.
Good questions. And the guy that you're talking about, the guy who's in China, is that the guy Serpenza?
Yeah.
Okay, because Serpenza I want to talk about as a separate issue.
Yeah. I'm going to play a clip with him later, so we can talk about him then maybe. But talk about it in general, these whites.
I have a lot to say about Serpenza. But with regard to the white South Africans, you need to understand what they're exposed to. White South Africans, like whites everywhere, are only exposed to liberal media. So they're not allowed to say their own things. And don't imagine that people haven't been trying. There's been a right wing in South Africa all along. There's been a right wing all along at any point in time. There are whites in the white right, people who carried on with the work of Eugene de Blanche. You had Eugene de Blanche. You had people in the former government. I mean, the former government, was apartheid. And all those people were silenced. And when power was handed over, where the real change came in South Africa was we could still talk about race until the late 1980s. But then as liberalism, you need to understand the strategic situation of South Africa, because at that time we were fighting a very intense war in Angola. Though those things, I must tell you, Andreas, I'm going to return to those topics, because there are things that we did in the past that I now have many questions about now that I've learned more and I understand history better. But anyway, the situation at that time was we had internal conflict inside South Africa. We had lots of black unrest, and we were also fighting the Russians and the Cubans and the blacks in Angola. And the majority of the best of our military force was up there fighting in Angola, and it was very hectic there because we were up against tanks and artillery. It was a real proper war, and so the fighting there and the pressures that were coming on South Africa, lots of pressures were coming on South Africa. The thing that I think broke the whites, the thing that broke the Afrikaners, was it appears to me from looking at the history that America and Britain and the West was going to pull the economic plug on South Africa. South Africa was going to get sanctions, full-on sanctions. And that is what made the ruling whites chicken out. And Jews were around there, and Jews were also pushing them towards liberalism. The big change where the white South Africans started losing their minds was in the early 1990s, we started getting things like CNN and all that kind of stuff. Larry King Live, the Jew, Larry King Live was on TV every day. So white South Africans were beginning to get exposed to the same kind of stuff that all of you in Europe and America were constantly exposed to. And so one of the things that I just want to point out is that the behavior of whites everywhere, if you look at whites anywhere, you'll see that where did liberalism come from? If whites had been left alone to be themselves, what would they have been? They'd have been racists. There would have been Nazis and fascists among them. Whites in their natural state think like that. But all of you, everywhere, you were all inundated with liberal propaganda. And our liberal propaganda began in the late 1980s, early 1990s. And it was liberal, liberal, liberal. And it was all about you are wrong, you are wrong, you are wrong. And so by the time, and even in South Africa, we've got the English-speaking media and the Afrikaans media. Now, all the English-speaking mass media is owned by Jews. But the Afrikaans media was owned by the Boers. And the Afrikaans media used to be the only racist media in the country. But it lost ground against all this liberalism. And then later, it even changed into being liberal. So by the time the blacks took over power, and once the blacks had power, the blacks, everything that whites were exposed to was liberal and did not include race. So you've got people in the white right in South Africa now, for example. You've got people who are like 30 years old, okay? Let's say 30, 40 years old, that were born maybe in the time of apartheid or born after apartheid, but they were never in their education were they exposed to race. They don't know anything. They've actually grown up liberal. So they think like liberals. And when they think like liberals, they don't see race. They don't see Jews. They don't even know who we fought. The stupidity of whites in the white right, people who become racial, they don't become like racially aware, but they become aware that there's something wrong. That you'd be amazed how little they know about anything, because all of that has been erased. That it's been erased from, remember, we've been under black rule for almost 30 years. Mm-hmm. All of those things from prior to that, you know, we've had more than 30 years of just liberal indoctrination. So what you do see among the Boers is the Boers do know, even the young Boers do know, they know the blacks are idiots. And they even joke about it, but they have to be quiet about it. So they've been conditioned to know that they must never speak. Those who do know about race know that they must never speak about race, and the others don't even know that race is an issue. So it's actually horrific. It's horrific how much white people can forget. How much white people can forget when they're only under one set of propaganda. Mm. And it's the thing that's the problem for the white right is that the white right never has the money, never has the access to the facilities to be able to broadcast to large numbers of people. So even when you've got guys like Eugene Tablanche and the AWB and those guys, they don't have the means to talk to the masses. And whenever they speak to the masses, they have to do it by way of some liberal journalist. And then the liberal journalist says, well, you're an idiot. You know, I was talking to this idiot in the AWB, and, you know, they're a bunch of fools. So the big thing that the current white right, which, you know, doing the kinds of things that you're doing the things I'm doing, we need to grow our stuff, because I've realized with time that the problem for whites, it's not that whites are it's not that whites are idiots. It's not, and when you get guys like, who's that Christian professor, that guy who says that whites are so good that they'll destroy themselves. We're so wonderful that we'll give away everything and destroy ourselves in the process.
Kevin McDonald?
Yes, yeah. Something like that. And now those guys are talking nonsense. That's not true. The real issue is that normal white people everywhere in the world are inundated with liberal propaganda. That's all. And when I look at whites and I see how whites react when you start teaching them things, and I've had lots of whites come back to me and say to me, you know, you changed my life. You taught me something. And I'm totally different now, etc. I must tell you, Andreas, we don't have anything that's wrong with us. The only thing that's wrong with us is the people who control the mass media. That mm-hmm. is the problem, period. End yes. of story. There's nothing else to it.
Yes.
But at the same time, this is where like, I have a like, say that you were in a, you're completely a blank slate, but you still have your like ability to do, deduce things, right? That you were in a room.
Okay.
And you have these things called flames licking your feet and your face and it's burning and you keep burning yourself. Like at some point you would logically be like, okay, these things that we call flames burn me. You know, you would realize.
Yeah, but you have the media telling them that it's not the flames. It could be anyone that's burning you, you know?
That's what I, like, maybe I'm just too much of a rebel in my brain, but it's like, if you sit there and you look like everything that has happened around me, like people getting murdered, shit happening, people having, you know, defecating on the streets, and it's always the same characters.
Yeah, but
you'd think that they would be like, huh, maybe there's a pattern here.
Yeah, but they see it. They're being robbed. They're having all kinds of problems. They know people are getting murdered and robbed and stuff. But the media will tell them that it's crime and it's because of poverty, because society is getting worse. They don't have any jobs. There's so much unemployment in South Africa that they have to become criminals. And that's why you have all this violence. See how they did that? Now you believe
that. I'd
just like to add something to you. Yeah. That the whites are told whenever in South Africa, whenever the whites start getting irritated, the whites are always told, you did not give these people a chance. That is why those people are behaving that way. You were nasty to them. That's why they are nasty to you now. You are the cause of that problem. That is what is told to people all the time. In business, in everything, they're constantly told, these black people would not have been like this if it wasn't for you. It's apartheid that did it. I can't stress that enough. That gets told to people every day in South Africa.
I believe that, and I can see that. But at the same time, it frustrates me personally to see otherwise, you know, intelligent people being such fucking sheep that you know, that they have the thing smacking them in the face, but they're like, somebody comes along and says, no, it's your fault. You're like, okay. It's like that kind of subdued slave mentality just doesn't sit well with my brain. I find it very baffling that it's so common. But yeah, I guess
let
me just add to that. Remember, in South Africa, if you don't fit in to that liberal mode, you won't get a job. You won't get anything. So you've got all of society, telling you, your boss is telling you, your preacher's telling you, the media's telling you, the president's telling you, and you also get women and others, Christians, and then they say, yeah, you know, we were wrong. So we must leave these people alone. They're going to be okay. just give them a chance, you know, maybe like a 1,000 years, but you know, just give them a chance. So I can't stress enough how that whole business environment is like that. I worked in the corporate world all of my life here in Johannesburg, and it was like that heavily, hey? And you know, so the thing is that the common white person doesn't have control of his own society. His society has been taken over by others. That is what you need to understand. And the same has happened to you people. Yeah. You cannot be yourself.
Yeah, but that's true. But in a way, the way I view, like, I try to always look at things in a positive light. But what kind of gets me black-pilled, as we say, with South Africa is that South Africa is
such
basically
an extreme example.
Yeah, it's like, of course, we have racial strangers here and we have all the issues, but like, we're still majority white. But in Africa, South Africa, for example, it's like it's so extremely obvious and people still don't get it. It's quite astonishing, really.
Could I just add another thing? Yeah. Is the same thing happened in Rhodesia.
Yeah.
Once the whites lost in Rhodesia, and that was when I left, but I was in touch with people who lived there afterwards, and after the whites lost, then what happened was, and the rest of us left, two-thirds of the whites left Rhodesia when black rule came, and one-third remained there. And when you spoke to all the people who were among those who remained there for the next 20 years until the blacks finally wiped them out en masse, all of those whites were talking exactly the same way. They were also all of a sudden liberal, and they forgot that just 5 years before we'd been killing blacks left, right, and center, and now they're liberal. Now they're liberal. You know, let me put it another way to you. When somebody conquers you and somebody controls you from the top, they change the way you think. Germans are a perfect case in point. Take a look at Germans now. How many Germans now would go out on the street and do Heil Hitler salutes and praise Goebbels and Hitler and so forth? You'll find that Germans are shit scared to do that. Mm-hmm. And it's because your society has been destroyed from the top. All of our problems as a race comes down from the top. It comes from the top. The media is the first poisonous snake. But all of the top comes. And then you get other whites who are in there. And what I will tell you about the Boers, because I just want to say a bit more before you ask, is the Boers especially, we've got English-speaking South Africans and the Boers, the Afrikaans-speaking South Africans. The Boers used to be very Christian and all that, but now there are many that are changing. There are people that are losing their faith in Christianity, and they are changing. I'm seeing atheists for the first time in my life among Afrikaans speakers. But so they are definitely changing as a people. But one thing about them is that the Boers are a closed society. So they are very closed among themselves. And what they may say among themselves, they won't come out and say in public. So that's the other thing you've got to keep in mind, is if you just go and talk to them and they don't know you.
Yeah, that makes sense.
They will be careful. The English, if you look at the English in South Africa are the most pathetic of the lot. They are weak. They are, and they're also intermixed with Jews. That they can't tell the difference between themselves and a Jew. They really, I'm not joking with you. So they think like Jews, and all they think about is business and that kind of thing. The Boers are still much better shape. Anyway, I hope that helps you. That's all I can say.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is, like, I guess we all have discovered the same thing and probably said it in many ways. But what the people, for example, the people that are the most fanatic right now about liberalism and gay rights and tranny things and this, that, and the other, if they woke up tomorrow in a complete, say, national socialist state, they would be the most loudest supporters of that current system. There's the there's this usually the most vocal of most fanatic of the current thing are people that they'll flip flop no matter what. That, you know, it's the same kind of persona that used to, you know, burn people on the stake during when Christianity was the in thing, and now they're basically descendants are the ultra woke, you know, destroy the church. Like it's kind of weird how some of these people can flip flop, and when you live long enough, like you can just go back and look at things that people, some of these more famous individuals, have said 20 years ago and what they say now. It's complete contradictions, and they don't even notice it themselves, and they don't see anything wrong with it either. It's kind of creepy. So in a way, yeah, like, you know, once, that's why it's important to kind of get hold of political power, because that's the only way you're going to get these masses to stop destroying themselves, basically.
Yes, you're so right about the importance of power, that it's very critical. You can change everybody. We could take everybody in South Africa and change them into Nazis. We could take freaking everyone in Sweden and change them into Nazis. When you are at the top, you've got such an advantage. And just look at the way the Jews operate, how they crush white people down. Anytime someone says something, oh, they try and ban them, they try and take money away from them. You know, let's call it Jewish terrorism against whites and the white right. It's a constant, ongoing thing. You know, some of us even end up in court. I've been in court, you know. So,
me too.
So, you know, just look at Jewish terror around you and this evil system that has snuck up on you. And it's stolen your system. The most important thing the Jews have stolen is the ability to talk to people. The mass media is the most problematic thing.
Speak freely. Yeah, and I would say that it starts with the banking. Like, they've been working on financial institutions for a very long time, like 200 plus years. And then, or 200, it's thousands of years, really. But lately, with the central banking and all that they've established in the West. And with that money, they bought the media that they control. They also have gotten into all the higher education. Like, when you look at American top universities, there's a lot of Jews that are controlling those institutions. And they decide who gets to go to these universities. They get to study to become the new executives and all the new people that are going to run companies and run other institutions. And they're the ones that are going to decide who gets to be platformed and who gets to say what and what laws are going to be on the books and all that kind of stuff. So that's power, and that's on top, like you're saying. But I would say the media is the most immediate thing that you can see that affects our minds. And it's so easy to convince regular people without critical thinking to have completely new opinions. Like you mentioned COVID and Corona shit. Mike, like, that took, I don't know, first it was a few weeks to convince us that it wasn't that bad. And then it was like 2 years of, this is the end of the world, wear masks for fuck's sake. And it was a new religion all of a sudden. And now it's Ukraine shit. So the media is the biggest enemy. And if we had a country, a pro-white country, with our own media, where we could tell our own people what to think, because that's what we need to do. The power on top needs to tell people what to think. Because that's what they do all the time. Their fucking opinions are the same all over the Western, all the white countries. It's anti-racism, it's equality, it's equity even, and gay shit. So that's why we have the countries that we have now, and that's why South Africa is a rainbow nation. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and even that silly, stupid term, the Rainbow Nation, that's not a term that was ever used by anyone else in South Africa. I'm sure that was just a Jewish marketing gimmick. You know,
that wasn't even about gays, was it? That was just about mixing the races. Or
Yeah.
But
it's the same like the American version, the cultural melting pot That was also a thing by he was a Jew who
It was a Jewish play playwright. Yeah, a rural play about the melting pot. Yeah, that's
what
right.
was his name? The guy.
I don't know.
I've got something. I'd like to interrupt and tell you something that I noticed a long time ago that only Ben Klassen, you know, the founder of the Church of Creativity, Ben mm-hmm. Klassen.
Yeah.
Ben Klassen is probably the only person who spotted this in the Christian Bible. And no Christian ever thinks twice about this. But Ben Klassen pointed out this thing. If you look in the Christian Bible, it says, right in the beginning, it says, in the beginning there was the Word, and the Word was God. And Christians always have a way of fumbling and bumbling around that and trying to explain that. But that could actually be an acknowledgement by Jews of how powerful the Word is. Jews have known all along that it's what you do with words. Words have got power. Mm. So look at that sentence again. In the beginning, there was the Word. And the Word was God. So the Word is, you know, you just need to see it in the right sense. That could be a little bit of Jewish shenanigans lying there in the Christian Bible.
Yeah, and that's also like why I am pretty much, unironically, a grammar Nazi. In that sense, is that I don't really mind if, you know, somebody has the wrong punctuation and stuff like that. You know, we all type on mobile devices these days, you know, autocorrect sucks, all that. But I'm very allergic to when people start using words in the wrong way. And sometimes we have
to do like irregardless, you mean? Yeah, it really annoys me.
It is still a word.
I know.
Yeah. But the thing is that, and you know, you went put me off track here, but yeah, so like words. When people start using words the wrong way, like we might have to do that at times just to convey a message to the audience who are so used to the new meaning. Like an example of the word is liberal. Like if you look at the origins of liberal, it's pretty far away from what liberal means today, and the same with liberalism. But the same comes with the word racist. Like nowadays, anything can be viewed as racist. Doesn't matter if it has to do anything with race or not. And I think we should be that's kind of a duty we should have among ourselves as well. When we hear people in our daily lives using words incorrectly, calling something racist that has nothing to do with race, whatever, that we correct them, because if they get used to these words having these new meanings, then they're more easily programmable. And that's something that I think we should all work very carefully with and spot and correct people in our daily lives, because that's something everyone can do in their daily life without ever bringing politics into it. You can just say, you're using that word wrong. And that's a very small thing you can do and keep people on track.
Yeah, but it's like, it's kind of a cliche at this point, but 1984, when they're removing words so that you can't express your feelings. And that's what they're doing with the hate speech laws, yeah. Where in Swedish now you're not even allowed to say Negro if you're a racist.
Wow.
You can say Negro if you're a normal person and you love Negroes. But if you say something negative and you add the word Negro, you're in trouble. So it's just ridiculous things like that. And, you know, we can't speak about Hitler in a certain positive light without getting into trouble.
Yes, yeah, so that's to explain to Jan that the thing they've added in Sweden is that it's the context that matters, not the word anymore. So whatever you say, as long as it's in a negative context, that can be hate speech.
Yeah, and they'll just test it. They'll report you, and then they'll test it in court, and maybe you get convicted. And then they have a conviction, and then they can move on from there and just make it worse. So that's pretty crazy. But that's, you know, 1984. Eventually, we won't have a word for a dark-skinned person in Sweden. They're just Swedish people, and we can't criticize them because that's all Swedish people, you know. And that's, you know, if multiculturalism isn't erased within the next 20 years, that's where we'll be at, maybe even sooner than that. More words will become illegal. And it's interesting, this thing with words. It's kind of esoteric, you know, this thing with spelling, casting spells with your words.
Television.
Television, yes, that's right. So it's very, very powerful. And they obviously know that, and that's why they have this power with the media that they use to control our minds.
There are some comments I have based on the things you guys have said, just briefly. When I look at the way Jews and blacks work with words, because blacks are idiots and they lie, Jews are just sly, cunning, devious liars. And Jews are masters of propaganda and so forth. But at the end of the day, where we're heading down is, you know, my friend Alex Linder, he says, you know, whites are so literal. But I've looked at it and I've thought about it a lot. And I don't see that as a fault. In our race, in our culture and civilization, everything has an exact meaning. We're actually a very precise people. We're very precise. We're very accurate. We know what we're doing. And when we say things that have a very specific meaning. Now we've got all these Jews that are busy playing, Jews and liberals, busy playing with words, etc. Well, the bottom line is that given enough time, and I think we're very close to it, you'll find that words and terms have no meaning. That between Jews on the one hand and blacks on the other hand, words will, every word and every concept that we ever had in Western civilization will have no meaning at all. Because these people abuse everything in many ways. About your situation, you guys in Europe and Britain and America, you all suffer from a problem that we had, and I call it levels of betrayal. And I actually want to do a video about it. But in a nutshell, you've got Jews who've come into your country, and the Jews have somehow gotten a hold of your elite. They've either promoted people into your elite, or they've messed with your elite. So what you've got is you've got a hostile people ruling you, but they're people of the same, but many of them are the same as you. And they will use your system to destroy you. And it's going to be very hard. And when I say levels of betrayal, what you'll find is that somebody will betray you, but then you'll find that somebody else will betray them. And there are other levels. And there's a whole bunch of Jewy nonsense going on there. And that happened. The place where I saw it the most was in South Africa. And eventually everyone is betrayed and everyone's destroyed. But they destroy your society selectively. First they come after the Nazis, then they come after the next one, etc.
Yeah, right.
But the good news, and this is where South Africa is, the good news is that when everything's been destroyed and the non-whites are in charge, the good news is that their society collapses. And for them to take control of you is much harder. We're in a whole new era. The game is not finished.
Mm-hmm. I had this article that I wanted to read. I don't know if we can read the whole thing. It's not long, but we have many other things to talk about. But just to get some of the details of what is going on in South Africa, we have an article from bloomshekelberg.com, I think it is. And I'm just going to pull it up here on the webs. So it says here, and you can interject if you have comments when I'm reading, or anyone can interject if you have comments. We have Africa's richest city is crumbling under chaos and corruption. He says, Johannesburg was built on gold. It is now such a mess that homeless people direct the traffic. And there's a picture here of the collapsed embankment of a bridge in downtown Johannesburg. And that's symptomatic. Solomon Uwa's fingers work. It's a illustrative piece here. Work quickly as he speaks over the hum of his sewing machine. That's because the hum of his sewing machine might stop at any moment. In a few minutes, the power will go, he said. The 51-year-old runs a tailoring business from his garage in Johannesburg. Outages leave him idle for up to 10 hours a day. Surrounded by piles of colorful material, he needs to work while he can. It's a rush that South Africans have begrudgingly become accustomed to, as they are forced to use more and more ingenuity, and blacks are known for that, to navigate daily life. Charge devices, take a shower before the hot water goes off, and leave the house before the traffic lights go out. Schools, hospitals, restaurants, businesses rely on backup generators to keep running. Homeless people guide vehicles through potholed streets for cash. Why are they potholed? The continent's richest city was built on gold, but it's now defined by chaos, crime, corruption more than ever. It encapsulates the wider collapse of basic services across South Africa, from a broken railway network disrupting trade to archaic sanitation that triggered a recent cholera outbreak near the capital, Pretoria. Parts of the country increasingly look like a failing state. At the heart of the dysfunction in Johannesburg is a governance crisis. Since the country's governing national party, the African National Congress, ANC, lost control of the city in 2016. Unstable coalitions have resulted in 6 mayors in 4 years. The current leader is a member of a party that holds 1% of the municipality's 270 seats. And here's a picture of what they call a pothole. Like, it's a fucking abyss in the middle of the
street. That's a sinkhole.
Yeah, that's a game over if you drive into that one. So, services and maintenance are the most visible casualty. Then there are the rolling blackouts implemented by Eskom Holdings, the state-owned power utility, which has become a byword in recent years for South Africans' troubles. Has a fleet of coal-fired power stations that are old, poorly maintained, and badly designed. I think they were very good design, probably a long time ago. That's probably the problem. The shutdowns are known locally as load shedding, and for up to 4 hours, 4.5 hours at a time. The country still functions, but the hurdles are getting higher. We may not be at a point in South Africa where we're a failed state, but we're certainly a failed government, said Tessa Dooms, director of policy at Riviona Circle, a non-profit organization whose state aim is to transform South Africa into a robust, sustainable democracy. Yeah. We don't feel the effects of having a failed state because of other sectors of society continuing to function, she said, but we certainly are feeling the effects of a failed governance. Johannesburg needed 300 billion rand, that's $16.3 billion, to build a new infrastructure, power, water, sanitation, and make repairs. According to former mayor, something, Mufu Falatse, who was voted out of office in January, the current administration plans to spend the lion's share of its latest budget on sustainable services to help clear the backlog of improvements. That's about 60 billion rand, according to the plan unveiled on June 13th by Dada Morero, another former mayor and now an ANC member of the Finance Committee. While we are cognizant of the growing backlogs, we are limited in our ability to respond due to the suppressed revenue performance in recent years, he said. Johannesburg became Africa's richest city thanks to the gold rush that started in the late 19th century and continued through the apartheid era. The metropolis for more than 5 million people then became the economic dynamo of Nelson Mandela's Rainbow Nation and the hope for prosperity that came with it. Almost half of the population is unemployed and living in poverty. Nationwide, the jobless rate stands at 32.9%. Around 18 million people rely on some form of social aid, which makes the number of beneficiaries twice as many as registered taxpayers. Meanwhile, crime has proliferated. The once flourishing central business district is an eyesore where the derelict buildings are hijacked by criminal syndicates, forcing out major commercial operations from the area. For more petty criminals, in vogue are cables and metals that can be stolen from electricity substations and sold onto the black market. Others just try to connect to the grid illegally. The power cuts that make the morning and evening commute an obstacle course as motorists weave around gaping holes, uncovered manholes and unattended sinkholes, and exposed power cables. Seeing homeless people in groups of 10, up to 10, control traffic when lights are out is now a common occurrence. Here's a picture of a homeless guy controlling traffic.
He's not actually homeless. I'll tell you more, but carry on.
He's just another neighbor.
You finish. You finish. Okay. I'll explain that.
Yeah, no worries. Given Masi Yendi, a self-appointed traffic controller, moved to Johannesburg 8 years ago from his village in Venda, more than 500 kilometers away, things didn't go his way, and he found himself on the streets. His latest gig has proven more lucrative than begging. In the morning, Masi Yendi goes to a corner shop where the owner gives him the load-shedding schedule for the day so he can position himself by the traffic lights when they go out. Motorists embrace the makeshift solution to keep traffic going. Given a trip that could take 15 minutes can end up being 2 hours. On an average day, Masiendi says he can make up to 300 rand in tips from drivers. Officials are less happy. Police have been the most hostile towards us, says Masiendi, 32. They get picked up and dumped on the outskirts of the city, he said. Our only crime is directing the traffic. You literally did nothing wrong. The outages also provide the cover of darkness for more serious misdemeanor. In Rodenport, west of Johannesburg, 12 mini-local substations costing 700,000 rand each have had to be replaced in the space of 2 weeks. Residents in the suburb of Flörhof went without power for 6 days after a transformer was stolen during the load shedding between 10 p.m. and 12:30 a.m. one night. Local resident Sifu Masigu, 45, said he had to rely on a small gas cylinder to heat water and barbecue what he could. All of our food for the month was spoilt, he said on his street near the vandalized electricity station, eerily quiet except for the buzz of a generator coming from the only house with lights. On day 4, we had to take out all our meat, braai it, eat it, and give away the rest. City Power, which procures electricity from Eskom and distributes it in Johannesburg, reckons it lost more than 500 million rand over the past year as a result of materials damaged or stolen during load shedding. The infrastructure is unable to cope with the surge that comes from return of power, which damages cables and substations, prolonging darkness for days at a time. There's also the question of whether they can get hold of the supply in the first place. As a business, we pay around 19 billion rand to Eskom for electricity annually, but half of the time we don't get that electricity, said the city power spokesman Isaac Mangina. It means that we have wasted that money and we are not making any profit. Eskom chairman Mufu Makwana, said in an interview with Bloomberg on June 9th that a change in management structure has helped improve performance and blackouts are being reduced. Well, that's good news. That's probably little conciliation to justice. Oh my God, these names. Can you just fucking get proper names? His small restaurant in the inner city has been hit by both crime and power outages. The once lucrative business is now on its last legs because of energy insecurity. Uparaugu, 52, was forced to dismiss half of his staff and move to a smaller premises, but is still losing money. On a day last month, he cooked 200,000 rand worth of food and he sold only a fifth of it. A local gang also demanded that he pay 350 rand a week in protection money. In the morning I can no longer start cooking early, like I used to, because of they take the electricity, said Oparagugu, who added he couldn't afford to buy a generator, switch to the gas, like some larger restaurants. When you wake up, it's not there. Yeah, it's just magic. It's not there anymore. A number of business leaders have raised an alarm over the nation's current trajectory. The central bank estimates that a power cost the economy 900 million rand a day and will shave off 2% points of this year's growth rate. In recent years, they met with President Cyril Ramaphosa, and pledged their support in the three critical areas of energy, logistics, and law and order, according to Cas Covadia, chief executive officer of lobby group Business Unity South Africa. For Solomonova, the tailor, it feels like he's been here before. Now married with two children, he moved to South Africa 23 years ago from Nigeria's Delta State as the country faced energy insecurity that crippled the economy. The first sign of decay, he noticed, was the dirt. How he needed to polish his shoes more often, he said. Then came the rest. What happens when the lights go out? Vandalizing starts, he said. My country went the same way, the same route. After some years, things fall apart. Everything is gone. So that's an interesting illustrative piece of everyday life in South Africa with the load shedding. That's the power outages that they have and all the consequences of it. And then you have Nibas literally destroying everything that's supposed to help them against the load shedding. It's just systematic, isn't it?
Well, it was an excellent article. Lots of things to comment on. I'm going to try and go through them as fast as I can to just get through the main points.
Yeah.
But tons of stuff. Excellent article. All right. First thing about South Africa. The wealth of South Africa comes from the mines. That South Africa is insanely rich. Andreas, I don't think I ever sent you the video that I did about the incredible wealth of the Boers. Maybe I must just send it to you. You've got to hear it yourself. Incredible wealth. Because I got some video of something that you just got to hear.
Yeah.
Anyway, the bottom line is that, do you know that at this point in time, in the ground in South Africa, that the amount of minerals that's in the ground at the moment is worth over 40 trillion US dollars.
Mm.
40 trillion US dollars. Now, if you want to go back to how the hell did that, what happened, the whole issue is the Anglo-Boer War, instigated by Jewry to seize South Africa from the Boers. So that is why the Boers who live here don't control the main wealth of their own country that used to be theirs. Mm. It's in the hands of Jews like the Oppenheimers and others. Anyway, so all of those companies, and I've looked at a bunch of big mining companies, even others, and I've dug into their backgrounds, and you see Jew owns this, Jew owns that. But the biggest ones were the Oppenheimers. They are the Rothschild representatives for South Africa. And do you know that in the 1960s, it was estimated by a professor that the Oppenheimers with their Anglo-American, that they owned 70% of all the businesses in all of South Africa.
Mm.
One family owns 70% of the entire economy. When Jews come into any country, they steal literally everything. They literally own the economy. I've heard this before. I've heard this before, and that's the situation in South Africa. So all these wealthy and super rich, they're all hobnobbing with the Jews and the elite of the world, and they're working with these blacks, and they're just using the money that they're making out of all these things to pay off the blacks, etc. But the country is wealthy. The country is insanely wealthy, over and above all the other things that we can still produce. Okay, about rolling blackouts. The rolling blackouts, known as load shedding, they're actually unreliable, and they change all the time. So you can't actually plan your business or many things around it. Even if they tell you today that it'll be like that tomorrow, it could change. So anyway, so all of those things play into the thing that it'll damage any business. So any business that's reliant on power has got problems. Yes, that's a good chart there. The rolling blackouts are just getting worse and worse. And I want to tell you that the stuff that's happening in South Africa is not just a South African thing. Whenever blacks rule, they all stuff it up. Zimbabwe, which used to be Rhodesia, now has every day, they are 18 hours with no power. Jeez. In other words, they only have 6 hours of electricity in a normal day. And in Rhodesia, the pride of Rhodesia was Lake Kariba. Lake Kariba was built as a hydroelectric dam to power the countries that are now known as Zambia and Zimbabwe. When I was a kid, all of our electricity came from Lake Kariba. We didn't even need coal-powered stations anymore. Everything was hydroelectric. One hydroelectric dam drove the mines and all the power of two nations. So, but now after black rule, it's gone to hell. And part of it is also the black plague. The blacks are increasing in population all the time, and they are sucking and they are overloading systems and not improving on the systems that the whites built. So yes, in the case of South Africa, much of this infrastructure was built in the 1960s, and they've loaded the country down with people and wastage and all kinds of junk, bad maintenance on top of it. And so now, you know, how can it handle a population that's many times bigger than it was? Same thing for Zimbabwe. That guy who comes from Nigeria is also most African nations are insanely wealthy. In Nigeria, oil literally comes out of the ground. Okay. They got more oil than they can handle. Okay. And, yet go and look at Nigeria and what a shithole it is. Shell Oil is there busy pumping out all the oil, selling it. They're one of the bigger oil producers in the world, but look at how they live. They live like backward scum. So, you know, it doesn't matter which country these people rule or how wealthy the country is, the blacks will mismanage it. They will steal from it. They will damage it. They will destroy it. Kenya used to be the most important country that the British used to boast about. Do you know what the blacks in Kenya are complaining about now? The blacks in Kenya are complaining that all this infrastructure built by the whites, that it needs maintenance. They don't like the fact that it needs maintenance. Well, they've had it for 60 years. You know, whites couldn't build it for it to last 1,000 years. You know, 60 years is already good enough. Now they're complaining, oh, the stuff is falling apart. The white stuff wasn't built to last forever, apparently. Mm. So they complain about everything. In South Africa also, the things that come into it, firstly, is lack of maintenance. The government deliberately took money away from Eskom in the early days. They took money away from certain important things that needed to be done to spend it on other junk. So there's all kinds of things that the blacks deliberately chose not to do, and they didn't do it, and now we're paying the price for it. So another thing, the blacks in the townships, don't even pay electricity. The townships have got bills of billions of rands that they don't pay to Eskom. So, and they even come and they hook up to the existing infrastructure. They make illegal connections and they draw more electricity. So they are a force of self-destruction and mayhem themselves, and they help to create the problems. The article you read cited Johannesburg as a dreadful place, but I want to tell you something. Rural towns across South Africa are in even worse shape than Johannesburg. They're even worse. Their roads are even more screwed. And I've been in some of them. So believe it or not, as bad as Johannesburg is, it's not as bad as the rest. You should see some of those other places.
This is like a result of white people being forced out of the labor force that actually know how to fix roads. Like you have all these black people who don't know how to fix roads.
In the case of electricity, forcing out of white people is the main reason there is an electrical problem. They got rid of all the white Afrikaans guys who were the engineers and the people and the technicians who repaired the electrical stuff. They were forced out, and now everything's gone to hell in a handbasket. Mm. So lots of the problems are not just mismanagement. It's not just the misapplication of money. It's not just wastage. It's also they got rid of the whites. That's a big thing.
And these guys that they say are homeless, are you had something about them as well.
Okay, what I want to say about that. In the case of many, they say that article said that homeless people direct the traffic. That's very rare, very rare. That particular guy that they mentioned, I've probably only seen that once ever. What was happening prior to that was there was an insurance company, one of the big insurance companies in South Africa, actually decided to send out teams of blacks whenever there was a power outage because it probably helped to reduce insurance claims and accidents. And they were sending out blacks to go and do most of the traffic direction. But I must tell you, generally speaking, there's nobody who directs the traffic. And generally speaking, a 15-minute journey could end up being an hour journey or something like that. When I drove to, I was in Pretoria a couple of weeks ago, and I came back, and man, I'm telling you, when you get these power outages and the traffic jams you get, it's hectic, it's nasty. Yeah. But that's now normal daily life in South Africa. It's normal, and it happens every day, and it's no longer like a rare thing. And that part that said that the blackouts are reduced, that's rubbish.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, they put that at the end as a positive thing. Now it's improving.
No. Whenever they say it's improving, it improves for a month or two, and then it goes back and becomes worse. It's much worse than it was. About things like that Johannesburg being a mess, that film footage from Serpenta and all those guys where Serpenta shows a lot of places that look terrible, all of those places are in the center of Johannesburg. They're the central business district. Believe it or not, 40 years ago, when I first came to South Africa, whites could walk on those streets. Those streets were fine. They weren't perfect, but you could walk on them. You were safe. You could walk anywhere over there. Nowadays, you can't go there. And those very same streets, I drove somewhere to go and buy some batteries a couple of weeks ago, and I took a wrong turn, and I ended up on those same streets where Serpenta was, and it's nasty. You don't want to be there. You want to get the hell out of there. But believe it or not, those photos and things you see are not the worst. There's even worse. When you get to a little bit further north in Johannesburg is a place called Hillbrow. Hillbrow in the 1970s, Hillbrow was like a miniature Manhattan. People lived in apartment blocks. Whites lived in apartment blocks. They partied every night. There was nightlife, etc. Those places, you can't go to those places at all. I stopped going anywhere close to those places 15 years ago. They are very dangerous. All those apartment blocks and things are controlled by blacks. It's very, very nasty, very... It's even worse than the stuff that you've seen. And yes, when things – the blacks are wonderfully self-destructive. This is a wonderful thing that I've noticed about blacks. When blacks – I've said this before, but I'm going to emphasize it again because you mentioned the story, for example, of Roodepoort. Roodepoort, where the substations, when the power is out, the blacks come and they steal the whole freaking transformer. Mm. So now the substations are buggered. Well, that's the beauty about blacks, is that blacks create a problem. Then once they've created a problem through their incompetence, laziness, stupidity, firing of whites, etc. Once the problem is there, then it gets interesting. Blacks make it worse. So once the problem is there, they then start behaving in a way that makes it worse. I'll give you another example, a common one, even more common than the stealing of the transformers, is blacks will come and dig up the copper cables. Mm-hmm. I was without power 2 weeks ago for 2 days because blacks started digging out a copper cable. They dug a copper cable, tried to steal it in the night, and it caused a power outage in my area for 2 days. We had to wait for 2 days for them to fix it. Luckily, our local security company actually managed to catch two of the blacks. But in Pretoria, I've got a friend. He's been without power like every three or four days, he's without power because the blacks have stolen the copper cables. So when things get worse, the blacks make it worse. The government doesn't fix it. First of all, the government doesn't fix it. And the other blacks come and they make it worse. And the levels to which blacks can do this will amaze you. It's wonderful. It's fantastic. It's a whole level of creativity none of you can imagine. Yeah. It'll just blow your mind. Let me try and give you a better example. I'm just trying to make some notes of some other things. Okay, let me give you another example of blacks at work. I know a guy who works for a company that does security, and they use drones and high tech to do security, owned by a white guy. They went to one of these power stations, big Eskom power stations, lots of theft, lots of stuff going on there. By the way, do you know that blacks in South Africa, that they steal something like 2,000 tons of coal a day off trucks?
Jesus.
Off trucks. They steal 2,000 tons a day off trucks, okay? So among the – to give you another example of blacks – let's call it black problem solving. Black problem solving makes the problem worse. Okay, so when the blacks came into power, they didn't like railways. Okay, railways are a thing that white people build. Railways are awesome. Railways are fantastic. They're cheap. Cheapest way to move anything heavy on land, you do it with a railway. They didn't like railways. They moved everything to trucks. They destroyed the railways. Railways have been destroyed already, okay? So then everything is trucks. The trucks come and the trucks destroy the roads. Then now all the coal that they need for these huge power stations doesn't come on railway. It comes on trucks. So the trucks drive on the road, huge convoys of trucks that go there. And then on top of it, in between delivering coal properly, they also scam them. So they've got criminals who work with the trucks, and they even put like junk coal on the trucks, and they steal the good coal to sell it. And then they put the junk coal into the power plant. Then the junk coal has got pieces of metal and stuff, brick and metal inside it. It fucks up the fuck. It explodes inside the power plant. Things, I'm not joking if I tell you, things explode, okay? They explode like a big fucking bomb, okay? And they explode and blow up, and then a chunk of that power station doesn't function. This stuff carries on. Anyway, so this white guy told this buddy of mine, he told me they got the contract to do security because there's so much theft, so much stealing going on at the power stations by the blacks. So anyway, they got all their high-tech stuff and their drones and everything. They started monitoring things. Within a month, they reduced crime by 90%. 90% reduction in crime in 1 month, okay? So no crime. They even started catching which managers, because there's corrupt, everyone's stealing, okay? It's not just the people at the bottom or the guy over here. The managers are stealing. The bosses are stealing. Everyone's stealing. They're just stealing in different ways. This one's stealing in this way. That one's stealing in that way. Anyway, they reduced the theft by 90%. They were very proud of themselves, and they thought, okay, we've solved this. Everything's good. It should be great. Guess what the management does? The management doesn't like the fact that there's no stealing going on anymore. They come and they change the rules. They change the rules so that the security company is not allowed to do all the things that it used to be able to do. By changing the rules, the stealing goes up again. So now they can steal again. Mm-hmm. So when you got people in power at the top, man, if you lose power, anything starts happening. And, you know, the corruption in this country is beyond imagination. And another thing, the wastage and the theft will shock you. Do you know that I was reading an article one day about costs of things in government, you know, so hospitals. Let's say, for example, a mop to clean a floor. A mop might cost you, I don't know, 20 rand. Let's say in a shop, you go and you buy a mop, it'll cost you 20 bucks. That in the hospital, a mop will cost like 4,000 rand, okay? Mm. And it turns out, why does it cost 4,000 rand? Well, it's because they got buddies, okay? And there's a buddy who's got a contract, but buddies with buddies with buddies, they got the contract, and that's the price that they will get it at. But there's a whole bunch of people involved in this, and everybody's taking a cut. So when it comes to, and the bigger the job is, the more stealing there is. So when there's something that's got to go out on tender, and somebody's got a tender for it, and it's going to be something that's 100 million rand or a billion, you know, then they start bringing in lots of their buddies, and this one's got to pay that one off. There's bribery. There's all kinds of things going on. And so something, to give an example, for example, when we needed to build a new power station under Black Rule, this was 15 years ago. The government came back and said, to build a new power station is going to cost us 60 billion rand. And then all the whites who'd been involved in electricity and stuff, all the white experts and engineers turned around and said, but that's ridiculous. A power station does not cost 60 billion rand to build. They only cost 15 billion rand. So how come it's now four times as expensive as it used to be? Oh, well, that's how, let's call it black economics. That's how black economics right. works. Okay. So, and then the blacks come and they say, well, you see, also it's that expensive because it's so much better. Do you know what our previous president said? He said, when we build this, there'll never be power outages again. We're doing the job properly. There will never be power outages again. 15 years later, we've got more power outages than we've ever had in all of history. And by the way, that power station that they built for 60 billion, they got the Japanese to build it. But then again, black management interferes. Black power comes in there and the blacks interfere. Then they tell the Japanese, you mustn't do this, you can't do that, you mustn't do it that way. So the Japanese then build it according to what the blacks tell them, and now that power station can barely function. Parts of it have exploded, and it's like functioning at like a third of capacity or whatever. But these things will give you some idea of when you unleash these people, everybody starts stealing and nobody cares. The best thing that I can tell you about blacks taking control of a country is that ultimately nobody gives a shit. Mm. If I say to you in that way that nobody gives a shit, okay, that's the way they all are. Whether it's the policeman, whether it's the president, nobody gives a crap. They're all busy sticking money into their own pockets. They don't care. And this is a huge difference between whites and blacks and Jews as well, is that whites look at things and they say, hold on, this thing's not efficient. That thing's not being done the way it should be. Why are you doing that? You know, white people are not capitalists. We're not Jews. We always look at efficiency. We always look at honesty. We always mm-hmm. criticize a thing. Why are you doing it this way? Why are you wasting money? Why are you employing someone who's incompetent? Normal whites, when normal whites are in charge, whites get irritated quickly. but that's why we succeed. That's why our stuff works, and that's why we actually save huge amounts of money through our efficiency and our honesty. But mm-hmm. when you get Jews and blacks involved, baby, then all that goes out the window, my man.
Yeah,
so that's all I can say.
That's the good stuff. So I wanted to play this clip from the Serpensa movie. Oh, sorry, from the video. Before we go into break, in just a little bit, but there's very good comments on. I put some memes on the video version. If people are tuning into the audio version right now, like illustrating the things you're talking about, blacks making the problem worse, and they're also incapable of maintaining what white people have built in all these so-called colonized countries. Like, they have broken down bridges that are hundreds of years old at this point, and they still haven't found a way to repair the bridge. So, we'll watch this little video here, and it's connected to your comment when you said that the blacks, they were going to be in power forever, and how you're talking about the corruption that they have, and white people, you know, trying to be good, trying to run an efficient society, also employing objectivism, like they're trying to see things objectively, what's best for everybody and all that kind of stuff. Whereas blacks, they just want to fucking get their piece of the pie. And I've got a timestamp here where he talks about ESCOM, which is government-run electronics, and how they fucked everything up. Let's put the whips up here and go.
But the ANC government does not want private power companies to come in, because then they won't get all the money. They won't be able to steal the money, because you have to understand that power is something that is so essential that nobody can go without it. Everybody needs it. And so they have a stranglehold on every single citizen in South Africa. If you want power, the only way you can get it is to buy it from Eskom, the government-owned, ANC-owned, infiltrated, corrupted entity. Eskom. So if another provider came in and could suddenly provide better power, cheaper, everybody would immediately flock to them, and the government would lose out on all those billions of rands of corrupt money to buy their latest Bentleys and private jets. I actually have a case in point. You see, here we have a small town in South Africa where a private company had set up a solar farm. Now, this solar farm was set up for their own purposes. They got permission to do it. But it was generating too much power, and much more power than they were using, so they put some of it back into the grid in the local area, and they actually pretty much got rid of load shedding for that little town. So the power wouldn't be going out during the day because they were able to put so much power back in. But the government actually sued them and prevented them from helping the local town
have power during about.
The day, because they said it would set an unrealistic precedent, and other people around the country would want to have the same amount of power during the day or the same access, and so it's not something that they would allow. So they actually stopped them from doing it. You see, corruption in its pure form, like the ANC government, is something that simply cannot be tackled.
Yeah. It's an interesting example. It's exactly what you were talking about with the theft of the coal. Here you have probably white people, I would guess, white people.
Yes.
Set up a massive solar power farm, and they're making too much electricity. And then blacks have to get in there and say, well, that's not good for everybody else that's not making electricity, so we have to shut it down, you know?
That particular town is called Vredefort, and it's in an area where there are Boers. Rest assured, it's an Afrikaans thing. The only people who build anything in this country at the moment are whites, and mostly Boers.
They make white power. That's what you're saying.
Literally.
But what's the story with this guy, this China lover?
Ah, Serpensa. I'll tell you quickly about Serpensa. I've seen him before, and when Andrea sent me that video and I watched it, I've seen Serpensa quite a few times, and I wondered to myself, I wondered if he's not a Jew. And I went and I dug into his stuff and went and found his details. His real name is something else. Can't remember it now, but it's definitely a Jewish name, and He's definitely a Jew. It's something like Strel something. And he's actually, I'm sure that he's a South African.
Sturzel. That's what you said. His surname is Sturzel.
Sturzel, yes. And I went and I checked. It's a Jewish name. It's a common Jewish name. It's a German Jewish name. There are quite a lot of German Jew scum who were fleeing from Germany when Adolf the lawmaker was busy trying to bring law and order to Germany. And lots of those Jewish scum came to South Africa and had children, and they got rich and so forth. So Serpenza may come from that line. Anyway, and notice a few things about Serpenza. He says that leaving South Africa was the best thing I ever did. Yeah, now that's a typical Jewish, weak Jewish scumbag kind of viewpoint. He fled South Africa in 2005 and he went to China. Why did he go to China? I knew Jews a lot, and Jews used to love China. Okay, they're like, oh, China is going to rule the world. China, you know what my Jewish friend said to me once? He said to me, you know, you may have to learn a little bit of Chinese. And I'm like, and let me tell you, if there's any language I'm going to learn, it's going to be a European language, and it's most likely German. But anyhow, that's the way that the Jews were. And I used to watch all these Jews, and they were saying, oh, the future is China. China's going to rule the world. And as they were buggering off out of South Africa, they were saying, well, this country is buggered. I knew a Jew who left South Africa, and he said to me, and in those days I was ignorant. I'm talking, this is the 1990s. Jew I knew left South Africa. I knew he was Jewish. But back then I was friendly to these people, and I said to him, oh, sorry, I'm so sorry to see you go. So sorry to see you go. You know, we need white people here. We need good people, and you're leaving the country. You know what the Jew said to me? He said to me, countries come and countries go. Mm. Well, if you're one of those travelers, then yes, countries do come and countries do go. But the white people who built those countries did not intend it to be that way. And you have come and you've made a great life out of it, and you're buggering off now that you've helped to destroy it. But the whites who live there are the ones who are going to be there when the blood is running in the streets. So anyway, so the Serpenza buggered off to China, obviously thinking China was a wonderful place. And now Serpenza is against China. He hates China and he criticizes China. And what did he do? The Jew moved to his next destination. He's now living in America. So mm-hmm. There you've got a typical California. Jew scumbag. And if you listen to at the end of his video, he says, I criticize things and I tell people, you know, I criticize anything that is wrong. Well, that is what the bastards were doing here in the time of apartheid. Mm-hmm. They were sitting and saying, oh, you mustn't do that to the black people. You mustn't do that. You're doing this thing wrong. They were moralizing all the time, and their moralizing destroyed us all. Yes. That's what brought us to where we are. And if you look in your own countries, they're doing the same thing in your own countries. All these moralists who are moralizing, to be honest with you, those moralists need to get a rope put around their necks. And that is how that story should end. Those people brought the Afrikaans people down. They spent every day of their lives in their newspapers and on the media. They owned all the English-speaking media was attacking the Afrikaans people every day in South Africa. So anyway, so now Serpenza sits back and he says, oh, I told you so. Yes, and you're a coward and you ran away and you couldn't fix anything and you are part of the problem. So now the rest of us have to pick up the pieces. But anyway, he everything he tells you is correct, but he leaves out the race issue. He leaves out the role of them, etc., etc. But something I must tell you about the good side of what I've seen is with the collapse of the Boers, I don't know how long our show is still going to be, whether our time is up or whatever.
We'll do a little music break in a bit and then continue after that. So.
Okay, because I've got a few things to say.
Yeah. Should we have a break now, do you think?
That's fine. All right. Sounds good. So it's top of the
hour. I wanted to just tie up this little segment by saying that this is what happens, and you just finished on the point with him not mentioning race. Like, this is South Africa is what happens when we are not allowed to acknowledge race. Like, you live in a society and pretend that race is not, like, the most foundational, like, aspect of our lives. And we try to fix these problems. We pretend that black Africans can run white civilizations. That's what they're doing down there, and that's what they're doing up here now when they're importing the world. They pretend that they're going to build new power plants. They're going to set up the infrastructure. They're going to fix the railways. They're going to make sure that the trains go on time. All this stuff is white people's stuff. And they are not slowly realizing that people on our side are obviously doing it. But people like Serpensa, he is curating the message. Like, the message is, oh, South Africa is collapsing. It's a shithole country. ANC is bad. But he's not mentioning race. He's not mentioning the reason. And that's every mainstream pundit can objectively see at this point that South Africa is not doing very well. But no one's going to mention the reason. No one's going to say that ending apartheid was a fucking mistake. So that's where we're at. And that's why you have shows like this and others that are pointing this out. It's pretty obvious to us, but people still need to hear this. Black people cannot run white civilizations. That is bullshit. And for the music break, we have a new tune from Tivas Tunes, fresh off the press, that we're going to enjoy. It is 4 minutes long, so we'll be back after this break.
Thank you. Yo, this is Rob Rondo here from Wheel to Rise. You're listening to The Nordic Frontier, the final solution to all your podcast problems. The final solution to all your podcast problems.
And we're back from that nice music break. That was Tiva's Tunes with Hyperborean Conqueror. And you can find that on Tiva's Tunes channel on Odyssey if you want more of that good stuff. And yeah, we're going to continue the show. It's 2:64 tonight, and we're talking to John Lamprecht about South Africa and African things. We're going to talk about donations, and we have some comments here. One thing that I saw in the chat earlier, I wrote it down, is this comment on platforms and how we have our own shows now and we have Odyssey, was the point. We have Odyssey and we have our own shows, we have our own culture and stuff like that. The thing is, Odyssey is not our platform. That's what you need to understand. Jews own Odyssey. They own Library, maybe. I think the founder of Library was Jewish. I don't know. The thing is, it's not owned by pro-white people. And this is one big problem. It's part of the big problem. Is that, for example, if white people that loved the white race and wanted the best for white people owned Odyssey.com, every single donation you made would go into their hands. Like the transaction fee and all the money that Odyssey is taking for all these super chats, that would go into a pro-white cause. That's a completely different arena. And that's where we need to be, really.
Can I be a little bit of a
black pillar in here? White pillar?
No. Contrary is the wrong word to use, but you're absolutely 100% correct. But there's this godforsaken puritanism at times that really grinds my fucking
I get it. Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're asking for money. It's like, it was one episode we talked about. Basically, you could have like, we could have our own, we could have a white investment fund, basically, and play the game, invest in white companies and seed white startups and all that. But there's no willingness to do that. And that's kind of what really annoys me, is that there's so much, I'm not directing this at you, but in general, there's so many people who agree with our view. But then when push comes to shove, they're not willing to put their money where their mouth is, basically. Or they're like calling everyone a Fed or calling everyone a grifter. And sure, there are feds, there are grifters, but you know, you're not going to get anywhere if you always shoot everything down from the get-go, right?
No, but I'm just talking about Odyssey not being in our control. Like
they
could turn off the lights tomorrow and there's no more show.
If somebody created, like video hosting is extremely, extremely expensive.
Exactly.
So in order to even contemplate setting something like up, you would need people to be willing to shove money at it, because it is like, look at how much it costs to host video. It's absolute insanity.
It was interesting.
And no one can do that.
It was interesting that Sam Hyde was doing his reality show. I don't know if you followed that, Fish Tank.
I didn't watch it, but yeah.
No, but after a few days, he was like, oh shit, this is going to cost us like $20,000 a day or something.
Yeah.
Or for 3 days. Oh my God, people need to chip in the money or we're out of a show. And then it ended up with them live streaming on YouTube and getting constantly shut down in the end. I don't know. They had a different solution at the end, but they literally found out how much money you need to host your own live streaming. It's insane.
Yeah. So like, to be realistic, like if you would have like a website that is even like 1% of the size of YouTube, with the convenience of YouTube, that doesn't mean, you know, what do you call it? Not torrents, but the way Odyssey works.
There's peer-to-peer.
Yeah, peer-to-peer. So if you want the convenience of YouTube that isn't peer-to-peer, like, no, a basic one-stop shop, you know, people, you're everyone would have to pitch in, and we prepared to pay at least, you know, 50, 60, if not even 100 euros or dollars a month just to keep that rolling, even if they don't watch all the content. That's that's like that. That's just to get it started. And then, you know, you're going to have the people, oh, I'm going to go and buy myself like some, you know, I don't know, crap from China with a swastika on it and doesn't even go to a white person.
Yeah, it's interesting that I've had this on my mind for a long time when it comes to money. And I never mention it when we talk about donations. We're going to read your donations in a bit. But it's like, there's always this question of where, what are you doing with the money? So like, you're donating to the show here and you're donating to the Nordic Resistance Movement. The money is going into the Nordic Resistance Movement primarily. It's activism, it's leaflets, it's banners and stuff like that. Things that need to be paid for. And then now specifically, we're going to upgrade some equipment. But it shouldn't even matter. Like, you are like consuming a product. And you're just paying for it because you like the product. That's it. You don't ask what the Coca-Cola staff does with the money once you buy a Coca-Cola. You enjoy the drink. And then you go on with your day. You don't question what the Jews are doing with the money you pay when you go to the cinema. Or maybe you do, and you're pissed off about it. But you still do it. You know, you still pay for Netflix. You still pay for a lot of bad things in the world. And you're not questioning what all these people are doing with the money. So I think that's a big straw man that people are using as an excuse not to just give money for things that they consume.
People are like really annoying fucking penny pinchers at times. It's like, I'm not saying that you should throw money at everyone. I try to go out of my way that if I consume, you know, on a fairly regular basis, not if I listen to an episode of something once in the blue moon or something, I try to go out of my way, and this goes for open source free software as well. I will make a donation because I'm using it, I'm enjoying it, I want it to become better, I want it to keep going, right? And and there's many ways. Like, you can donate money, you can, you know, be part of producing content. You know, there's many ways to do the same thing. Like, in many cases, it might be even worth more if you can help a hand, give a helping hand, than giving $10 or $5. I mean, for example, this show, you know, it's without some few exceptions of having to take time off, it's regularly here, airing on the same time with people who have to go to work for a living. We do this for free. We don't get a penny for it. And every penny we do get this goes back into the production. So it's like it's a work of passion, you could say. So there's many ways of about giving back. And yet you have so few doing it.
Yeah, but it doesn't even, that's what my point is. It doesn't matter what we do with the money. I could be buying ice cream all day long. Enjoy the show. Pay for it.
Yeah.
Pay $5 once in a while, once a year, pay $5. If everyone did that, that'd be some serious money.
And imagine how...
I interject? Okay, finish. I'd like to interject.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love what you guys are saying, and I've been thinking about it myself. And I want to tell you something that I observed in South Africa. Listen to this. You were talking about white investment fund. When I was running around like hell looking for a lawyer because I had the enemy on my back, okay, and I couldn't find a lawyer that would represent me. At a point, I went, somebody said to me, I must go and speak to Muslims. Maybe I could get a Muslim lawyer. Anyway, I went and I ended up talking to Muslims and dealing with some Muslims until eventually I did later find a lawyer. But interesting thing I discovered, we've got less Muslims in South Africa than whites. Muslim population, and the Muslims are mostly Indians. Yeah. They are about half the population, less than half the population of the whites. But guess what? They've got their own banks. They've got Muslim banks in South Africa. But you would never find an Afrikaans bank or a white bank or a Christian bank or any kind of thing like that. Yet, two million Asians can have, and they haven't got one, they've got multiple ones. And I look at that and I say to myself, look at that, you know. And you guys are right. In order to be able to really compete, we need to get up there and be able to fight with these people. And you're right about some things that irritate you. I've seen people expecting things for free from us, and then you go and see what they go and buy. They go and buy, and they think, and they do it without even thinking about it. They will spend insane amounts of money on some kind of junk, but they won't think of giving it to the white right. Because we can win. Most of the white right is a labor of love. I myself spent a long time. I'm retired now, but I spent a lot of time myself working in the day and doing racial stuff at night. Freaking 15 years nonstop, you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing is that... And I don't say that people like, you know, if you go to work every day, you know, you want to buy a new barbecue or a new car, whatever. I don't like, please be my guest to do so. But at least reserve part of that money to give back to this. And the thing is that the reason the opposition can produce so much fucking content 24/7 every day of the week is because they can do that for a living. And the thing is,
if
somebody can, like Andreas said here, it doesn't matter if he can pay his rent and not have to go to work a single day to a normie job and keep doing content, he's gonna be way more valuable and get more things done. And it doesn't matter what brand of cornflakes he eats or whatever brand of coffee he drinks. Or
no,
he
that's
buys,
what I mean. Like if you were actually taken out a wage, you would just live their life.
Yeah,
you buy all the drugs that I need. You know.
Yeah, but you would still be producing content that is valuable for the cause.
Yeah, of course.
More frequently, and you wouldn't have to go on a 2-month break to work evening shifts. Yeah, for example.
The only reason I wouldn't want to be in that position or put up a paywall or anything like that is the expectations of getting shit done, because I hate that pressure. Because
it's
a labor of love, and it's like a creative process, and it happens when it happens.
But you have like red eyes; they do this for a living, yes, at least years to. And it's their option. And if we can, you know, throw the cost of one coffee from a gas station or, you know, one Starbucks coffee, whatever they cost, like $15, you know, at them once a month. Yeah, it doesn't, like, it's such a small thing to do, but it has a huge effect.
Yeah.
Enough of my rant.
For sure. So we have some donations here coming in. We have Ryan GGG. He says HH. Thank you very much. We have DSalon7. He says, I've seen clips on YouTube of Durban, Cape Town, Salisbury, and other cities in the 60s and 70s. It looked like something out of a dream. A literal white ethnostate with clean streets and beautiful people. Now you can't find that outside perhaps Russia and Belarus. I don't know. Mike might not agree. But you have it in Hungary and Poland. You can find similar kind of stuff in areas, I guess. And Paris, not so much. We have next one here. Der Cherisker. He says, good episode. What's the guest opinion on Eugene Terblanche and his political activities? Keep on fighting, comrades. So if you give a comment on Eugene Terblanche.
Yes, Eugene Terblanche. Very interesting bloke. And the whole story of the AWB, because he led the AWB, and the story of the AWB is a very fascinating thing. What I will say in a nutshell is that the AWB at its peak had a membership of 900,000 whites. Most of them were common middle class and lower class Afrikaans whites. And these people were your middle class or lower class. But the AWB actually showed that you could have a militia, a mass militia of Boers, mostly Boers. There were some English guys in there as well, but mostly Boers. And they were willing to fight against blacks one-on-one, outnumbered, etc. The AWB was like a populist army that was willing to have an all-out race war with these blacks and to fight these bastards. The reason the AWB went down comes back to that issue of what I've described before, levels of betrayal. Their destruction, Eugene de Blanche himself, he was actually a very clever guy, and he even wrote some academic books, can you believe? He did poetry and all kinds of other things. He was a clever guy, but he wasn't a military guy. He was a very good orator. He could explain his position, he could defend his people, but he wasn't really a military man. And but he had everything in place for a good, solid militia that could have clobbered the blacks and fought them and smashed them by themselves. The reason he was destroyed was the government destroyed him. The government in power, which was itself Afrikaans and understood exactly what he was about and actually sympathized with him and knew that this is what the common white person wants, they actually were busy, and they became more liberal, and for various reasons, they started working to see to it that those guys never succeed. And there were things that those guys tried to do, and you'll actually find that real military officers actually went and saw to it that they weren't going to succeed, lied to them, etc. Real military officers, real politicians misled them. So what is the wonderful takeaway from me of the AWB is that whites, common whites, wanted to fight these bloody blacks, smash them into the ground. They didn't care. They were willing to do it. And I'm certain that in the future, you'll find that that exists again elsewhere. And their failure was all stage managed by the white government. The white government didn't want them to do that because of business, because of Jews, because of international stuff. I've mentioned before the issue in Angola of why when the blacks tried to destroy the Portuguese, and the Portuguese ended up fighting the blacks and chasing them out of northern Angola. And northern Angola for about a year didn't have any blacks at all. Any blacks at all. They were gone. They'd fled because the whites were killing them. But why did they come back? Well, the government brought them back because the government needed the labor. So it is a dependency on blacks that becomes the reason why you don't kill them and why you don't get rid of them. But this is also, Andreas, this is also why the failed state is a good thing and why the parting of ways between blacks and whites is a good thing. As the government has been firing more and more whites, some whites end up on the rubbish heap, some end up poor, but there are others who survive and who do okay. But the good news is that very quietly in this country, despite endless amounts of talk of it being a rainbow nation and all that, the reality is that there's a parting of ways between whites and blacks. The blacks are firing the whites, and believe it or not, for decades, the whites have been firing the blacks. I actually published an article on History Reviewed a long time ago where I actually had statistics of how many blacks are being fired all the time by whites. Whites were getting rid of blacks. I can't remember if whites were firing something like 160,000 blacks a year. So what's happening in South Africa, despite all the talk that's going on, white businesses are using blacks less and less, and black businesses and government are using whites less and less. We are parting ways, And that's a wonderful thing. Because once we've parted company, the less we are dependent on them, there's going to come a time where we won't need them anymore. And then we can do whatever we want. Then it will be the right time for the AWB. Then we'll be okay.
Yes, nice. I found a short clip of a training session, and I think this is a little speech by Terre Blanche.
It was billed as a right-wing world congress in open defiance of the talks on a multiracial South Africa. The AWB was openly displaying its guerrilla strength. Some of the demonstrations were almost medieval in character, but this extremist group is known to possess all the technologies of modern guerrilla warfare. Leader Eugene Terre Blanche warns his people will meet the African National Congress over the barrel of a gun. Strong words, but in numbers, the AWB may not represent a major threat to the peace process, although they are a warning that the violence won't end with a multiracial democracy. Christine Chapman, Sky News.
Yes.
And how right they were with that warning.
Yeah. So when did he die?
No.
Was it 2010? 10, okay.
And I want to tell you that on my website at the time, I'm the only person who published it. I looked into it closely at that time, and I wrote an article, and I said that the murderers of Eugene Terre Blanche were Robert Mugabe and Julius Malema. And at the time, I was following the events very, very closely, and Julius Malema, who's a current problem here in South Africa, Julius Malema had just gone and visited Robert Mugabe yet again, president of Zimbabwe. He'd visited him, and I got a link to a black website where these blacks were saying that Malema and Mugabe had agreed that it's time to invade the farms, the white farms in South Africa. And I read that about 10 or so days before Eugene Terre Blanche was killed. So I concluded at the time they killed Eugene Terre Blanche because they knew that he would be the resistance, the leader of the white resistance, and they probably were then going to invade farms. But and there are other things that show you that there's weirdness around his killers. One of his killers was from Zimbabwe, and I believe that he was possibly even a military guy in civilian clothing in South Africa. So three blacks came and murdered him. One was a Zimbabwean. And then nothing further happened. There wasn't a farm invasion. But I want to tell you, Andreas, there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind the scenes that people don't know. And I learned this over a period of time, that there are many times when even America, even Europe, do things, and their intelligence services know things, and they go and they talk directly to the South African government and they give them a warning. I learned this through people that I was connected with, because at a point in time, I was working with blacks from Zimbabwe to get information about the destruction of the white farmers there. And I myself got into big trouble. I had people threatening me. I had nasty things coming. I was very scared. And what I was doing was I was passing on information to the American embassy. And I was directly in touch with the American military attaché in South Africa at the time. And he was a colonel in the U.S. Army. And because I put all these blacks in touch with him, he didn't know that I was even writing all the reports. All the things the blacks were taking to him actually came from me. But because they didn't want to deal with whites, I could only function by talking to them and introducing them to blacks telephonically. Anyway, later on, when I was in trouble, I contacted the guy and I said, listen, all those blacks that I've been sending you, I'm in trouble now. And so the guy then the guy said, oh, so it was you who was behind it. So then I went and I met the American military attaché face to face. And we actually had a lunch, probably at U.S. government expense. And I gave him my documents and my book and my stuff. And I said to him, listen, this I'm the guy that was giving you all these stuff and putting these people in touch with you. But I've got people that are threatening me now, and I'm very worried. And that American colonel was very interesting to talk to. And he listened to me as I was telling my story, and then he started to smile. And when we ended our discussion, he said something weird to me. He said to me, what you must do now is you must go to the police station and you must report this at the police station. And I thought to myself, what the hell? I must go to the police station and tell them that I'm an anti-government activist. I'm a white racist who's an anti-government activist, and I thought to myself, you're a fucking idiot, okay? But anyway, listen to this. So anyway, I was quite irritated when he said that, and I was irritated by a smile, and then he said, thank you very much. And he even said to me, anytime that you need us, you know, you can contact us, etc. We parted company. And Andreas, I was so afraid at that time that I shut my website down for about 6 months. And for 6 months, I didn't do anything.
Was and that then African I began, crisis times?
That was the original African crisis. This was probably about 15 or so years ago. Anyway, what then happened was, then I thought, okay, let me start posting a bit again. And I slowly started posting. And Andreas, then as time went by, I posted more and more and I got back into the swing of things. But I later noticed something. I thought to myself, you know what? Nobody's hacking my websites anymore. And I'm not getting threats anymore. Everything's quiet now. And I want to tell you, that American colonel, that guy saved my ass. And after that time, I never had problems again. And I'll tell you another story related to that, that in 2019, when I went to America, when I, was it 2019?
Was it before COVID or after COVID? That's how people remember things.
No, 2010. 2010 was the first time I went to America. After that, a couple of years after that, I wanted to go to America, but I'd never been there before and I didn't have a visa. So I went to the American consulate, and I went there, and I said to them, you know, I want to apply for a visa, etc. And there was a black guy there, and the black guy then started asking me questions, and then he started asking me some questions about if I'm involved in any kind of whatever activity. And something came up like a book. And anyway, he asked me a question, and I decided I've got to tell him I've written a book. And I said to him, I've written a book, and the book is called Government by Deception. Because I'm very afraid of lying, because I'm trying to apply for something, and if I lie, you know, then maybe I'm never going to get my visa. So I tell him, you know, I have written a book, and the book is called Government by Deception. That's all I said to him. He went away to his computer and he came back later, came back after 5 minutes they've got a phone there. So he's behind bulletproof glass and he's got a phone and he says, pick up the phone. So when I pick up the phone, then he speaks directly to me and the other people in the room can't hear. And the guy says to me, have you ever been harassed by the South African and Zimbabwean governments? And so then I said to him, yes, I have. And I then said to him, I have been in touch with so-and-so, et cetera, et cetera. Then he said to me, look, I'm going to have to refer this to my manager. And so I had to wait a couple of weeks. And then one day they phoned me and they said, come and collect your visa. And when I got a visa, I got a 10-year visa. When I told my Jewish friend, because at the time I was still friendly to Jews, told my Jewish friend, hey, the Americans gave me a 10-year visa. He said, wow, you know, none of us get 10-year visas. you know, so they must kind of like you. So so I think my interactions with them, because I gave them information and stuff, it was very, very useful. But that guy saved me. And I knew other guys who were Afrikaans who had been in the military and military intelligence, and they also guided me on these issues. And they told me, man, the Americans and Europeans are monitoring these blacks all the time, and that there are definitely, Andreas, there are definitely times when the blacks want to do wild things, when behind the scenes you don't know what happens. And so, returning to the death of Eugene Tiblange, I'm sure that if there was a proper move to slaughter the whites in South Africa, maybe it was just quiet. Maybe the only thing that happened was the murder of Eugene Tiblange. And maybe America and Europe actually went straight to the government and said, listen, we know that there's this plot that's being hatched, and you better stop this dead in its tracks right now. So don't imagine that the military are all asleep. There's more going on than you know, but it will never be put in public.
No, that's so true. We also have resident Baker. He says, great show. Jan is a great guest. Can Jan comment on the death of Stephen Mitford Goodson, author of A History of Central Banking and the Enslavement of Mankind? Dr. Peter Hammond believes that Goodson was poisoned. Do you have a comment on that?
Yes. I did know Goodson for a little while. He wasn't that friendly to me. I tried to speak to him on a number of occasions and get additional data, but we did have some interactions, yes. And I knew Dr. Peter Hammond very well. And I used to even do shows with Dr. Peter Hammond, and Peter Hammond even used to mention the Jews, and he even used to be pro-Hitler. But he's a Christian, though. But there is the issue of when Goodson died. Peter Hammond was the person who knew him the best. And Peter Hammond told me the weird story of what started happening. And then Goodson was in hospital. And then Stephen Goodson was actually getting very afraid. And he was warning. He was actually saying to Dr. Peter Hammond, I think I've been poisoned, or something like that. And then he died like within the next day. There was a bunch of very weird stuff, and Peter Hammond was very close to it. And if Peter, and I tend to take Peter Hammond seriously. So I would say that if Peter Hammond believed that Goodson was poisoned, that he's probably right. I had heard this, and I had spoken to him about it shortly thereafter. What happened between me and Peter Hammond is that Peter Hammond, being a Christian, he gets funding from America. And I used to do lots of shows with him, and I love doing shows with him. But what happened was some Christians in America basically cut off a lot of his funding because of me. Mm. And they specifically named me. They said to him, you mustn't be busy with this Nazi and this Hitler stuff. And so that was how Peter Hammond and I had to then part company, because it almost destroyed him. So that's very sad, but unfortunately that's the weakness of his position that he was in.
Yeah, but, so he's dependent on that funding. That means that he is not allowed to go down a National Socialist path or talk kindly about Hitler.
Yes. Absolutely. Mm. I want to just say some other things since we continued the show. I'd like to just give you some conclusions as well, Andreas.
Yeah, can I just finish the donations? Sorry. I just wanted your comment on Goodson there. I have three more donations here, just quickly. We have Night Nation Review. He says, culture of critique. Yeah, we were talking about McDonald. And pathological altruism, that's what he calls it, which is interesting.
Yes, that's the term.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept because it's pathological. It's like a disease, and the disease is caused by something. There's a cause of the disease that makes us this way. And I don't know if I believe that it's like evolutionary or anything like that, that it's innate in in white people, but it's definitely imposed on us because we have it. Where it comes from, I think, Jewish subversion, but I don't know. And we have...
Could also be a bit of a Christian thing as well.
Could be. Could be.
That whole thing of Hitler and the lower man. There's a thing where Hitler said, if Christianity was followed to its logical conclusion, you would end up with... there was a term he said. Basically, the creation of failure, that you'd create failure all the time. There's a nice quote from Hitler on that.
Mm. Could be. It's a controversial topic. Is that the table talks?
Table talk.
It's very controversial in Christian circles.
I have something to say about the table talks. I'll make a note for just now.
Yeah, all right. So we have that, and we have Jack Handy says, "Hail victory," indeed. And then we have Scharfuhrer. He says, "Andreas is my favorite music producer. No bullshit." Well, I am honored to hear that. That's very nice. And I have intended for a very long time to get more serious about making music. The thing is, I'm handicapped, so it's very hard making it right. There's this thing where people, they listen to music and they can hear the notes that the music is, and I just can't do it. And I've just recently discovered that my son, he can do it. He can walk up to a piano and just pick out the notes of any song. So that's what he's doing now all day long. And we had no idea that he had this skill, but my wife has the same skill. And I don't have that skill. I'm like literally struggling to pick out one note out of like a chord progression. It's insane. So life is struggle, you know, it's hard, and we're going to continue. Thank you very much for the donations. If you want to make some comments or questions to the show, you can make so with some super chats. But continuing, you were... did you want to do the table talk comment first, or did you have something about Africans in Africa?
let me do the table talk quickly before I forget. Mm. I created an audiobook of a woman named Christa Schroeder. She was one of Hitler's longest serving secretaries. And I had gone through her book and I didn't know quite what to make of it. And when I was going through it, I began to see some things in Christa Schroeder's book that was really, really eye-opening. And I actually did two videos about it. The one was I just created a full-on audio book of it so that people can go through the full book. But I also did another video based on the analysis of it called Will the Real Hitler Please Stand Up? Where I try to describe Hitler's character as best I understand it from various sources. But Christa Schroeder actually gives very detailed discussions about life with Hitler. And even though she was just a secretary, Hitler interacted with the secretaries. They even came to dinner. They often had tea together, daily tea. They would chat to each other. The one bombshell that I saw in Christa Schroeder's book that really made me sit up and say to myself, I've got to put this book out, was Christa Schroeder told the story about Hitler's table talk. She said that she explained how it was that Hitler's table talk came into being. She explained that I think it's Bormann, who was his secretary, that Bormann was very concerned that he wasn't always at dinner and always at the places where Hitler was, and that Hitler had his times when Hitler was with his staff, he would relax. And Hitler would start talking and he'd start saying things that's on his mind and things that he's thinking. And so Bormann wanted to always know what Hitler was thinking so that he could ensure that he is operating in line with what Hitler is envisaging. So it was Bormann who actually started the process of this Hitler's table talk, where either he or other people were ordered that they must write down what Hitler is saying, However, she says that this had to be done in secret without Hitler's knowledge. And she explains why. She says that one day, that on more than one occasion, somebody would be listening to Hitler talking, and then someone would pipe up and say to Hitler, you know, what you've said is so interesting and fascinating. I'd like to write it down. And Hitler then said to them, no, don't write it down. Because if you write it down, then I'm going to have to be more careful about what I say. So that was then the basis by which they wouldn't make notes while he's talking, but afterwards Bormann would order or had ordered various people, you must make notes. And so it's from those, and those notes were from memory after dinner. So people would then make the notes and date it, and I think Bormann would sign it and so forth. But that is where Hitler's table talk comes from. So the bottom line is that Hitler's table talk is Hitler unscripted, Hitler not knowing that anybody is recording anything. So that is the closest you will ever get to the real Hitler. And, of course, I know that the Christians don't like it because that Hitler says many things about the Christians. Mm-hmm. So I found that story fascinating.
I don't know if it's a cope, but a lot of people are not a big fan of Martin Bormann. Maybe specifically because of this book, or they were also saying that a lot of people in the NSDAP didn't appreciate him. But he was known for being very meticulous, very orderly, I guess. But, you know, it obviously doesn't paint Hitler's views on Christian in a good light. And I think a lot of people take offense to that. Because officially, what anyone's going to say, he was, like, not anti-Christian in the public space. We know that.
Yes.
And a lot of people will argue that he was even a believing Christian because he talks about God in his speeches and stuff like that. So, yeah, I just don't want to cause a shitstorm in the chat. That's all. I'm the eternal diplomat.
I know all the things that you're saying. But, yeah, anyway, so I thought that was fascinating, that Hitler's table talk, for the people who can handle it, you know, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So anyway, regarding our situation in South Africa, I try to tell people that whites can survive anywhere, and many people in the white right feel that that they're losing and they're going to lose, and they're feeling very demoralized, and they're watching the blacks increase. So I noticed that, like in America and so forth, people are like very worried. Oh, you know, if the whites become 48%, then we're fucked. You know, that kind of thinking. But the reality is that whites are able to survive lots and lots of things. And we in South Africa, we're moving into a whole new phase. You know, we lost all our political power, and all of our politicians and leaders were not only lost power, but most of them actually gave up. They gave up, and we still, do you know that under black rule, whites using our previous apartheid political party were still getting 24% of the votes. Right up until the late 1990s, we were still getting 24% of all the votes. The National Party, which was our party under apartheid. But then what happened was the National Party just quit. They shut it down. They gave up. And, you know, that's a real loss, because imagine if we still could have control of 20% of the parliament. Now we've got control of almost nothing. Like, it's like 1% or 5% or something. So the thing is, what are whites like in their normal state, and are whites ready to die? And I've noticed that in the internet, I was, myself and others, there was another lady as well. We were the first people to start talking outright and publicly. But I've noticed over time that there's been like a rejuvenation, that the whites are continuing on to struggle on, And you've got different Afrikaans organizations. You've got different groups here and there. They maybe have problems with each other and argue with each other, but they are all growing. They are all growing, and they are big, and they're adapting. And they are becoming more and more powerful. And I'm very happy to see that. And of course, as things get worse and people get very worried, then more and more people start thinking. But the big thing about whites that I want to kind of describe to you about collapse is why I love the idea of a failed state. A failed state is the path to freedom for us, for whites. And it's very possible. There are lots of failed states in Africa. A failed state is defined as when a state starts losing control of the structures underneath it. But it's defined as a failed state when the police and the army no longer are fully under the control of the government. In other words, the state loses the ability to put you in jail, and the state loses the ability to kill you. So failed state is awesome, because if they want to come and jail you or kill you, they are so fucked up that their own structures don't even work properly. So let me give you an example of how the failing state has been solved in certain respects by whites. Take the issue of the police. From the beginning, the police were useless, and they became ever more useless. If we have crime in South Africa, the criminals are not caught by the police. The police don't even come to the scene of the crime. The crime occurs, the police don't care, the police don't even come there, the police never catch the criminals. So how it's done is it's done in two ways. We've got neighborhood watches, and we've got private security companies. And another thing that also happens, Andreas, is that we've got the Western world, white technology is always moving forward. And thanks to the internet and thanks to phones have probably saved our lives more than anything else. Because now everywhere in South Africa, whites in every community have got groups, and we share information on crime. So if there are crime threats and other threats, people in the community immediately know about it. So, and by spreading that kind of information, that helps us to stay alive. But the other thing was neighborhood watches, and especially private security companies. So private security companies then came into their own, and everybody, you know, people sign up for a private security company to protect them. And in my neighborhood, we've got one that dominates the neighborhood. It's a pretty good one. So these private security companies now are able to run efficiently, and they can patrol our suburbs, and you can call them, you can hook up your alarms to them, etc. So the private security company actually fights like 95% of all the crime in our neighborhood. They fight the crime, they chase the criminals. If we see blacks loafing around and possible criminal activity, we call them and we say, hey, there's somebody there. Somebody's loitering over there, go check it out. That kind of thing. So what has actually happened is that small business is actually doing the job of the police better than the police. And so the police, you won't believe it, but do you know, we never have police patrols in our suburbs anymore at all. Years ago, we used to get like one police car once a week. Now we get no police cars even during a whole year. We never see a police car. Last time I saw a police car was at the beginning of COVID, because they were locking us down. Mm-hmm. That was like 3 years ago, okay? So we don't get police cars coming here. They don't come here at all. The police do nothing. They don't worry about the crimes. The police actually are literally nothing more than admin clerks for insurance companies. So when you've had a crime, you go to the police, you say, listen, I had a crime, this was stolen, etc. I need a statement from you because I need to claim from my insurance. That is literally all the police do. The security company hunts down the criminals. The security company catches the criminals. The security company has gunfights with the criminals. When they've caught the criminals, they take them to the police. And the police just do the paperwork. So that is what has actually transpired. So in security, the police are absolutely useless. They do totally nothing, and we are able to function. Now, a similar thing is busy happening with electricity. With electricity, we were in danger. We might be in danger. This winter is going to be a dodgy winter, but we are slightly in danger of the whole electricity grid collapsing totally. Okay. Mm-hmm. However, and I was preparing for it, and my friends were preparing for it, and I went to buy extra batteries and everything and get myself ready and so forth. But already it's looking quite good, actually. And by the way, I have had days, there have been times where I've been 50 hours nonstop, 2 days, 2 days and two nights without any electricity whatsoever. So for me, that was a bit of a problem with my deep freeze. That was my problem, but I've solved that, sorted that out. But otherwise, what is happening now with electricity is that business, basically what it boils down to is business is starting to beat the government. Business is starting to take over the functions of government. So more and more whites, you know, when it comes to surviving without electricity, we have to cook with gas. We never used to cook with gas. We never even knew what it was like to cook with gas. Mm-hmm. Now all of us have to have gas, okay? So that's the only way you can heat some cook some food and heat some water, okay? So the other thing is solar panels. Generators are useful, but they're very expensive if you have to run them every day. They're insanely expensive. So solar panels are a much better long-term solution. Now, I sorted out my stuff by myself, all homemade stuff that I sorted out, and I'm functioning fine. And I did it by myself so that I could fix it so that I don't have to pay people to fix it. I can fix everything myself. I know how it works. But other people are paying money and they're getting people to install it, etc. I read about 2 weeks ago, I was noticing that the power outages, as we were entering winter, I noticed that the power outages, instead of getting worse, were actually becoming less. And I was like, what the hell? We used to have 8 and 10-hour power outages earlier this year, and now it's like 4 hours a day. We're only off for 4 hours a day. That's like living in heaven, hey? When you only are without power for 4 hours a day. But I then was doing some reading and I discovered that there's the solution, as usual, the solution never comes from the blacks. The solution always comes from whites. Turns out that big businesses, the really big businesses, spent insane amounts of money buying big generators. And so they bought big generators that allow those businesses to function. And that reduced some of the load on the grid. That reduced about one third of the load shedding load. Two thirds of the load shedding load was actually solved through people buying solar panels. So many solar panels have been bought and installed in houses in the last couple of months that it's actually, business between whites and Indians buying solar panels and businesses buying generators, that we have reduced the load that they were load shedding on. So it's looking more and more to me like technology and solar panels and that kind of stuff is actually going to defeat Eskom. So it looks to me like we're going to get to a point where we are using less and less power and more people are semi off the grid or totally off the grid. And it looks to me like Eskom will be able to leave Eskom to collapse. because Eskom is actually providing power mostly for black townships. It's the townships that are still dependent on Eskom. So electricity could be another thing that, like crime, it starts getting solved by us. And that's good news. The only thing left is that if only we could stop paying taxes to the government and let the government collapse. But those kinds of things might be coming. So what I'm getting at is that the way that people live and organize and the way that business works, and business does much better than government, is that even though some people fall on hardship, they lose their businesses, some people really struggle. There are people who do end up on streets, but there are also still lots of whites who are still functioning quite fine, and their businesses and their jobs are able to continue. And of course, thanks to COVID, more and more people are working from home, off the internet. So it is very possible that that when South Africa collapses, that it will mostly collapse for the blacks. It's the government that's going to collapse and the blacks that are going to collapse. And there's lots of whites still functional. Like one of the Afrikaans organizations has been building a university, a privately funded university has been built in Pretoria, and it's mostly going to be, and it's Afrikaans. So most of the people who are going to want to go there are whites. So it's an Afrikaans university. It's going to teach people skills and it's going to help them. I also saw how whites got lots of whites out of the squatter camps. They did it by going and helping them and training them and helping them to find jobs. And that's how lots of whites got out of squatter camps. And I'm currently dealing with somebody who does suicide prevention, and he helps lots of youngsters and whites also to find their feet. So all the progress that I'm seeing is all among whites, where whites are fixing whites are fixing themselves, etc. There were even whites who in some of these small towns were fixing the roads. In fact, the government had to give an order to tell people to stop fixing the roads. That was another thing that they said. You're not allowed to fix roads. People are going in, but farmers were fixing roads. People inside towns were fixing roads. So all I'm saying is that the more the government collapses and the more dysfunctional the state becomes, it looks to me like everything can blossom and function without them. And whites are mainly Afrikaans whites are in that thing. And I'm seeing it in lots of stuff. My internet that I've got is not normal internet. I've got internet through radio. I've got like a kind of a microwave internet. And it also comes from a little private white company that broadcasts the internet from a nearby hill, etc. I'm telling you, Andreas, all the things that I'm seeing, it's whites. When I go to buy batteries, most of the people who are in solar panels and batteries and that kind of stuff, most of those little businesses are white businesses. So they're making a killing. They're making a killing and they're doing better and better. So the beauty is that the blacks and their government and all the parastatals that they controlled, the very things that used to work under apartheid, like Eskom and all those things are collapsing, but the whites are still functioning. And Andreas, I'm telling you, we're going to get our chance to break free. My only fear is that people won't have the balls to secede and go and say, let's secede this chunk of territory and, you know, let's leave the government. That is really where we need to go. But Andreas, I'm telling you again, you've not seen the last of the Boers. You've not seen the last of white South Africa. And about the farm murders are pretty much, they might increase and decrease a bit here and there. But when I look at the statistics that come out from places like AfriForum is another white Afrikaans organization that deals with these things. And when I look at their statistics, Farm murders have actually been slightly declining since 2019. It's actually declining. It seems to be stable at about one person a week. But, of course, maybe some weeks there are two or three people getting killed. But it's more or less one person a week. It's about 50 people getting killed a year, 50 farmers a year, which, you know, we've still got 28,000 farmers. So, you know, one a week is not the end of the world. It's not pleasant. It is a kind of a war, but it's definitely survivable.
Yeah.
So,
well, that was a very positive note. I think we could wrap this, except for the farmers, obviously. But the whites are taking things into their own hands, and that slowly building communities and communication and technology that's going to be able to sustain you. That's really good news. But yeah,
we are creative.
Yes, indeed. So I thought we would tie up the bag for this time. It has been great having you on again. Very nice. Always nice to have you. And I'm sure we will have... Sorry, here we go. Oh, wait. There. Sorry. Mucking up here. I'm sure we will have you again in the future. More topics to discuss. The blacks are always up to no good. And yes, there's a lot of work to do for white people, for sure. Yes,
There's tons of work for all whites to do. But the main thing is to tell whites, don't lose faith in our civilization. Don't lose faith in each other. Most important thing, stick together. If we stick together, even we in South Africa can survive. And I'll leave you with that. Thank you very much for everything, Andreas.
That's right. White unity at every opportunity. You have historyreviewed.com is your website. You're on Telegram nowadays as well. History Reviewed. If people want to check that out.
Oh, I didn't know you're on Telegram.
Oh yeah.
Yes. I've got Telegram groups for all my websites, for African Crisis and History Reviewed, and I've got special Telegram groups just for my videos. Mm-hmm. So, and if you go to my website, I've got little adverts and things that pop up. It's my own little system, and it will tell you all those things. You'll see those things as you are on my website.
So where in your website can people find all the channels? Sorry, Andres.
if they go to my websites and they watch my videos and they check around, on every page, everything that comes up, it'll pop up with little adverts that tell you things about my stuff. Tell you about articles, tell you about Telegram, and you can just click. I've got tons and tons of stuff I'm adding there, so...
Nice.
Kind of shows them around.
Yeah, I wanted to say that there will be no show next week, next Tuesday. I'll be on the road then doing some camping. It's going to be a good time with the family. We'll be back the week after that, though, most likely. And I also wanted to say that I will be on Patriotic Weekly Review with Mark Collett tomorrow. And I will send the links to that in the... Nordic Frontier Group or channel on others, not on others, on Telegram. It is late in the land of the North, and we're going to sign out. Thank you for listening. Don't be an English cigarette, and hail victory.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.